And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Well, the vice presidential debate coming up Thursday night. I'm hoping Paul Ryan has a breakdown. I got to be honest, I hope he does. All the whining he does so well should be very entertaining. But tonight on the big program, we're going to talk about pensions in the first hour. Our governor, Pennsylvania's governor, thinks that pensions are like tapeworms. Or, I'm not sure, is it the pensions are like tapeworms, or are the tapeworms the workers who have dedicated their entire working lives to public service? Kind of shows you what, on either side of it, no matter what you think of the worker, no matter what our governor thinks of the people who work for this Commonwealth, and what he thinks of the governed. Also going to talk about taxes here in the first hour. Are they as high as we're told, and should we continue down the road to continual tax cutting until the wealthy pay absolutely nothing and still complain that taxes are too high? We are already paying them in too many circumstances to not create jobs already. We're going to talk about another beggar thy neighbor economic development scheme that's going to cost us plenty here in the coming weeks, months, and years. And, of course, voting. Along with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Yes, today, the last day to register to vote if you live in Pennsylvania, last day to register to vote if you live in Ohio or Colorado or Michigan or New Mexico or Florida or Indiana or Illinois or Texas or Georgia or Arkansas, Alaska, Hawaii, Louisiana, or Kentucky. Today was it. If you didn't register to vote, sorry, you are precluded from participating in the franchise of self-governance. All because you missed the deadline. And I think, and this is what kind of just drives me nuts. We have spent trillions of dollars of treasury. We have lost numerous lives. We've shed countless gallons of blood so that others can vote. And you look today, back in 2004, was the election for president of Afghanistan, which Hamid Karzai was the winner with 55.4% of the votes. You can say whatever you want. That's the democratically elected leader. And we fought for that. We fought. And, I remember the Iraq thing as well. The finger with the ink on it. Everybody had their finger with their ink on. Yet we have this artificial date. You have to register by this certain date or you can't participate. And think, we're just under 2 months away. We're just under a month away. You think about this. Shouldn't you have until the day before, the day of? Shouldn't I be able to go and register that day? That's what I think should happen. We should have same-day registration without question. The franchise should be open to everyone. If you're a citizen, you should be able to vote. Just how it is. Ian Millhiser over at Think Progress has pointed out that here in Pennsylvania, there are still five counties, regardless of the judge's decision, regardless of the fact that they're not going to be able to exclude anyone from voting because they don't have a photo ID. Never mind that. There are still five counties who have on their website that you cannot vote. Butler County on their website says, starting with the November 2012 general election, Pennsylvania requires voters to show an acceptable photo identification to vote at the polls. That's not true, but it's still right there on their website. Bucks County, they've got on their website, if you do not have a photo ID or are indigent and unable to obtain one without payment of a fee, you are eligible without payment or of a fee, you may cast a provisional ballot, and you will have 6 days to provide a photo ID and or an affirmation of your county election office to have your ballot counted. Perry County, ditto heads, Bucks County. So you've got Butler, Bucks, Perry, and of course Luzerne in there for good measure, who wrote on their website, all voters will be required to show a photo ID before voting at a polling place. And of course Delaware County, they didn't want to be left out, so they're number five. Stating on their website, Pennsylvania law now requires voters to show approved photo ID. Wrong. And I'm going to be defiant, my little bit of civil disobedience, and I will not be showing my ID, even though I have one. Yeah, I know. It sounds petulant, doesn't it? But the reality is, look, you know, we've done this. I've never shown my ID. I went through the process of registering. I have my card. This whole thing, this whole show your voter, your ID thing, is it's a divisive tactic. And what it's meant to do is to keep, you know, keep poor people, keep old people, keep students away from the polls. It's all it's meant to do. And you look at here in the Commonwealth, they admit it right before the trial began. There's no voter fraud here. It just doesn't happen. This isn't it. One of the universities here in the state also has on their website that students must present one of the following forms of photo ID when they go to their polling place to vote in the general election. So Westchester University, like the five counties, wrong. Now, look, I mean, these websites are not these aren't hotbeds of activity. There aren't thousands of people going. But, look, I mean, even if one person is sent away because of it, because their information is wrong, I think is wrong, and we need to fix. So I guess if you live in one of those counties or attend Westchester, just so you know, you don't need a photo ID. Simple stuff. But you do need to be a registered voter, and if you didn't get it in today, well, I guess you're out of luck because we have this very interesting law. Anyway, the guy who's there's this guy Hans van Spakovics, who works at the Heritage Foundation. And he was doing a panel at the Colorado Conservative Political Action Conference there, and they were talking about voter ID. And you know, again, you know, I love this rightward framing, and you've got to give them credit because they continually push out their message. And I've heard this. Well, you know, by making them go and do something, we're actually doing them a favor. So you know, the guy from Heritage, you know, here's what he had to say.
Getting the very few people who don't have an ID is very easy. And in fact, we should be happy that people have to get an ID like that. Why? Because you cannot function in today's society without an ID. And anyone who doesn't have one, we are doing them a favor. We are helping them to get the identification they will then need to do all kinds of things
like what?
If they want to apply for public assistance or welfare, you need an ID.
Oh.
You want to do all kinds of other things, you need an ID.
Oh, you know, like apply for welfare. The first thing off of a conservative said, wow, you know, you poor people, you need an ID. And you could apply for welfare. First thought off of his head. And we're doing them a favor because now they can apply for welfare. I mean, really, think about that. Now, understand. Their first line of attack is minimize. They're going to minimize, wow, there's this very small number. And he went into a whole discussion about, wow, it's such a small number. And, you know, in Georgia, they're doing this in Georgia, and they get like one person a year. And he goes into this whole weird, bizarre argument, which, you know, they're not actually out there recruiting people to come and get voter registration. Because understand, most poor folks, they don't vote. Voting, the higher up the socioeconomic ladder you go, the larger the percentage of people who vote, because they get it. They understand how important it is. And you look at what the Brenner Center for Justice at New York University published, this study not too long ago. 11%, they said, of all eligible voters in the country don't have a government-issued photo ID. 11%. Now, he goes into saying, oh, it's a fraction, a very small fraction. Hundreds of a percent of people don't have these IDs. Nonsense. I know several people who don't have them because they don't drive, and they have no need for one. But you look at the reality, and you look at my grandmother's generation, for instance. As they're getting older, they don't need a photo ID. They do need to vote, though. You look at a lot of minorities who live in high-density areas that have public transportation. What do they need a driver's license for? You think about the low-income folks who take the bus everywhere. What do they need an ID for? Now, look, it's not like I'm all in favor of people walking around with ID, but, you know, I often think, where are my right-wing friends who fear national ID cards, who fear this centralization of information? Kind of makes you wonder. But this guy, this Von Spakovsky or whatever his name is, he was a Bush appointee. He was on the Federal Elections Commission. And according to the Washington Post, he was one of those guys who used every opportunity. In fact, in his 4 years at Justice, they said, to make it difficult for voters, poor, minority, Democratic voters, you know, making it more difficult for them to get to the phone. And you know what I find interesting? Heritage Foundation. Home of the guy, you know, the founding of Paul Weyrich, the guy who had this great quote.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And you know, that was 1980. And I stopped and I thought about this earlier this afternoon. I've played that quote, you know, hundreds of times, and I've talked about my high school government teacher hundreds of times over the years. And it just dawned on me that, you know, he was really kind of a thought leader. I mean, I took high school government, what, 1983? Right around the time all of that was going on, just before the 84 election, you stop and you think about all of the stuff that was going on at the time. Pretty remarkable. And it was, you know, the more I thought about it, the more that guy was saying, look, you know, look what's coming. Get ready for this, because this is coming. This idea is going to be front and center. And here we are, again, you know, 27 odd, 28 years later. Still talking about the same thing, how to keep people away from the polls. And I remember he used to say, look, don't bother voting. Don't bother. Don't waste your time. Stay home. Makes my vote that much stronger. And I say that to all my friends. Yeah, I mean, it's one vote. But, you know, you multiply that by bringing a number of friends with you. Go vote en masse. Because the reality is, the higher up the economic scale you go, the more voter participation you get. Because they understand, the higher up you go, the more it's in it for them. The billionaire class, I would venture to bet they vote at 100%. And, you know, why would someone, you know, worth $1 billion, why would he bother going to cast a vote? Why would he care? Because they understand. And a little bit later on in the program, we're going to talk about big business leader who's going, well, you know, I'm not telling you folks who to vote for. But, you know, if you vote for the wrong guy, you could lose your job. And, you know, to me, that's voter intimidation. To me, that's, you know, as veiled a threat as it is, it should be almost criminal. But no, we're going to go after some mythical voting fraud. Probably, you know, the in-person voter fraud committer, he's probably driving around with the welfare queen and the small family farmer who lost his farm. I'll bet you that's where he's at. We're going to find him one day. You bet on it. We're going to find him. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
I was sitting in the street in front of the semi. I was nervous. I was so nervous. And I stood in front of the truck, and he kept trying to go through us. But we weren't going down without a fight.
16-year-old Carrie Peniston, who was arrested Monday at the Sensata plant in Freeport, Illinois, trying to stop Mitt Romney's Bain Capital from shipping her mom's job to China. Sensata workers losing their jobs to China in November have set up a tent city called Bainport near the plant in Freeport, Illinois. They repeatedly called on Mitt Romney to meet with them and help save their jobs. He has ignored them. Carrie, though, is determined to fight on and knows what she would tell Mitt Romney if she ever gets the chance.
I would look him straight in the eye. I'd be firm. I'd be assertive about it. I'm not going to give up. I think if I were to talk to him, I would want to convince him to save my mom's job and not take it to China.
National Nurses United says nurses at Veterans Administration medical centers across the country have overwhelmingly voted to ratify a national contract. The union says it's a master agreement unprecedented in its protections of patients' care standards and for strengthening the voice of RNs in the care of America's veterans. RNs with National Nurses United have now gained their first national contract in the VA system. Staffing issues were front and center in the contract. National Nurses United says this first national contract in the VA system has many improvements for RNs and for patients. The union represents RNs at 22 VA facilities. Strike fever is spreading in South Africa. Jesse Russell explains why.
Government workers in South Africa could soon be on strike. Nearly 75,000 mine workers have been on strike in the African nation since August, and on Monday, a union representing government workers said that public sector workers could soon be walking off their jobs. Workers represented by the South African Municipal Workers Union would be demanding market-related salaries if they walk off the job this week. Currently, the strike is expected to be a one-day show of force, as well as solidarity with striking mine workers. But the union has said it could be extended depending on circumstances. Workers at platinum mines were the first to go on strike, followed weeks later by workers at gold and iron mines. Truck workers have also been striking for nearly 3 weeks, and that has led to fuel shortages in rural areas of the country. If the strike actions continue, it's likely rail and port workers will also be going out on strike October 15th.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union, and by the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Right now, we are hard at work to bring a major natural gas processing plant to southwestern Pennsylvania. The best argument we can make to the company behind the project is Pennsylvania's embrace of free markets.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So I see this, you know, this story on defined contribution pensions. In fact, there is a 2012 U.S. defined contribution sponsor survey report that they do that talks about, you know, the number of people in the workforce who are participating in these defined contribution pensions. In fact, over the years, it's gone up. You now see, what was it, something like 80% of those surveyed now are contributing or are now participating in defined contribution pension plans, up from, you know, just 50% a couple of years ago. So you're seeing a massive shift, even continuing completely away from defined benefit plans. And according to this survey, which, you know, goes and asks all these professional companies, all these companies, you know, to talk about their employees, the results were released October 4th. The report said, and it's one of those things that grabbed my attention, only 22% of these surveyed employers said that their employees generally make informed defined contribution plan decisions. Only 26 of the surveyed said that they believe their employees had realistic expectations about what their defined contribution plans would provide, and only 9% believe that their employees have established a retirement goal. So you stop and you look at this, and I've been saying for a while, the next generation is really in for a rude awakening when it comes time for retirement. And what it's going to end up being is people are going to end up working until they die because, look, you're not going to have the money. And part of this survey looks at, you know, what were the concerns of the employers? And, you know, the effectiveness and cost, those were big ones. You know, employee attention, attraction and retention, that was the top one. And, of course, you know, legislation, we care about, you know, making us actually accountable for what we're doing. But, you know, down the list was what the employees were going to be, where they were going to be at the end. Would they be ready for retirement? And, you know, of course, you know, effectiveness and cost, you know, top of the list. But down the list, you know, is it actually going to work? And, you know, I remember the hearing that they had here, in the House had here in the General Assembly here in Pennsylvania, talking about the state pension funds. Because there's a push, and understand there's a push to destroy the state pension funds and do what they've done in the private sector, which they have done marvelously. I mean, they have convinced all of us that we could all be Wall Street tycoons. They have turned our pensions, well, into our gambling pot. It's our little gambling fund. And we're going to go into the Wall Street with the big tycoons and the big fish, and somehow, magically, we're going to win. Oh, silly us. And I look at this and I go, you know, the only people who are going to win in this are the people, the House. It's just like playing cards at a mob run card game. You pay the vig to the House, man. And I look at one of the key findings of the report that concluded more companies are charging participants direct, equal dollar record-keeping fees. The average number of investment options that are offered to the employees and to the companies declined 69%. And you start looking at this and you go, well, you know, what's going to go on? What's going to happen? Well, what's going to happen is they're going to, and understand, in the state with the PSERS and the SERS, what they really want to do with the state pensions, what they really want to do is they want to separate. They want to separate professional handlers, like the PSERS and the SERS people, from the money. And they want to put it into individual accounts, like they wanted to do to Social Security. The goal was to give everybody a little pot of money so that you could rob everybody individually. It's so much easier to... Well, it's so much easier to go after people who really aren't all that savvy and get them in. Because, look, I mean, they're snake oil salesmen on every block. Wall Street, that's where they've really gone. And I look at this, and if you think I'm kidding, Nanex, they track this. They're a group that tracks this high-frequency trading. They said on Friday, there was one computer, one single computer that placed trades and canceled orders. And they're not sure quite why, but it made up 4% of all of the volume in stock tradings last week. 4% of all, one computer, one single computer. And what they're saying is that, you know, this system, this computer, made a trade or canceled an order, made and canceled an order, every 25 milliseconds on about 500 different stocks. Every 25 milliseconds. Now, they don't know why. Not sure why, but they're thinking that they want to, they're either trying to jam up the system so that other people can take advantage of it, you know, kind of running interference, or it's, you know, it's the big con. Something's coming down the road. Now, look, federal regulators, they're looking into it. And, you know, look, they want to know what's going on and hopefully going to figure it out, but I've got the answer. The answer is simple. If you're making a trade every 25 milliseconds, for no reason whatsoever, I think you should be allowed to do it. But we should be taxing the hell out of it. You want to see it drop down from 25 milliseconds? Now, the Federal Reserve of Chicago, they've warned the SEC. Look, this is a dangerous practice. What we're doing is not investing, it's gambling. They did that more than two years ago. And I look at this and I go, you know, what they're trying to do with the pension funds, what they're doing on Wall Street, this whole push towards more, hooray, you're on your own, and here's your little individual account, and oh, by the way, here are the sharks. I mean, this whole thing is kind of like, you know, kind of like taking the bait to the sharks. And I look at what's going on here in the state. You got this state representative who, this quote just blew my mind, Warren Kemp. He's a Republican from Chester County. He said, I don't believe the taxpayers should bail out the plan when the markets tank. And I look at this and I go, you know, we're setting up a situation where these high-frequency tradings, all this is going on. There's something in the works. Who knows when that next crash happens and what's going to happen? Well, you and I, we're going to get stuck. And this whole discussion about the pension plan is this massive shift. And over the next several months, we're going to hear more about this. And they're going to do everything they can possibly do to make it sound like, oh, these workers, they're parasites. Oh, these workers, they're tapeworms. In fact, the article I read was from the Central Penn Business Journal. A guy named Jason Scott wrote it. He said, Governor Corbett has coined it the tapeworm and the Pac-Man of the budget. Yeah, talking about the pensions. And, you know, he goes into saying, look, they want to borrow ideas from the private sector. Oh, gee, what idea is that? Oh, yeah, they're gonna screw you out of your defined benefit plan and put you into one of these defined contribution plans. And I love the way the writer puts it, turning off the tap to stop the floodwaters of defined benefits. Because, of course, you know, the private sector has decided that the defined contribution plan is the way to go. And why have they decided that? Well, because they don't have to pay for it. And as I pointed out just a second ago, you know, the reality is the costs are going to be high. And who's going to bear those costs? Well, the individual. Now, for the companies, for the state, for an employer, yeah, your costs are fixed. Absolutely fixed. Write that off. It's someone else's responsibility. Which is why I have to be honest. I've always been a fan of enlarging Social Security. So that you have the ability to put money in, you have the ability to have a large pot of money to take on the needs of the retiring generation and make sure that people can do so with some respect, with some dignity. But that's not going to happen. What's going on in this country is a push towards, you're on your own, is a push towards, well, you're the individual. You're going to bear the brunt. And every story you read about this switch, this push towards redoing PSERS and SERS, always says, look, you know, it's going to make the employees less secure. It's going to make society less secure. And there's part of me that believes that's the goal. Because as I look at this, and, you know, it was one of those conversations that I happened to kind of stumble into. I was listening to C-SPAN the other night. And there was a guy, you know, giving a talk. He was the head of the, if I remember right, he was the head of the Labour Party in Britain. And he was talking about, you know, the argument is we're all in this together. You know, he was saying, you know, one nation, why is it that the wealthy get to walk away from their responsibility? Why is it that you don't see them paying their share? Why is it that we're letting them off while we're talking about cutting social services, we're talking about cutting education, talking about cutting health care? And the one line is, you just can't trust a Tory with the health care, which I thought was kind of interesting. But a lot of the things that he was talking about in his you know, 40-minute speech, you know, are things that I think we could learn from in this country. Having a strong social safety net to where, you know what? We have a growing standard of living for everyone, not just a handful. You talk about this mass inequality. The use of government contracts to raise standards, not destroy them. You know, we've got a bunch of politicians here in Pennsylvania and across the country. It's just not here. It's all over. It's this whole rightward push that say, you know, hey, we're going to lead that race to the bottom. We're going to be the ones who champion the race to the bottom because there's profit in it. There's money to be made. Instead of what I believe is, look, I mean, if we build a road, we build a bridge, we build a school, we build a hospital, we build anything in our community, it should benefit our community in more ways than just leaving something behind. And hopefully we're leaving something of great quality and great necessity, but also You know, the money that you spend into it shouldn't go to huge development firms who then take it out of the state or take it who knows where. It should remain right in our community. This is where globalization is destroying this world, not just our nation, but the entire world. Because we're putting so many resources in the hands of so few globally. You know, it's one thing you're talking about nationwide. You know, we're now talking globally. And I listened to this guy, this Ed Miliband, I believe his name was. He was the leader of the Labor Party there. And he's saying, look, you know, we should be making sure kids have education all the way through, you know, through to 18 and beyond. We should make sure that health care is funded because they're doing what Romney and the Republicans want to do here. They want to push that austerity. They want to cut, gut, punish. They want to slash programs. They want to kick, you know, poor people to the curb, which is what our governor here has already done. But they want to do that on a grand scale. And why? So they can give more away. And I look at, you know, Chuck Schumer today. And this is one of those moments where you go, finally someone's been going to say what I've been saying for years. Schumer gave a speech today at the press club. And he goes into this whole push towards tax reform. And he says, you know, there is perhaps no issue facing Congress that's more complex than tax reform. He said, but for all the disagreement on taxes, ask most policymakers, Democrats, Republicans, independents alike, what the broad outline of tax reform looks like. He said, you'll get startlingly consistent answers. And he laid it out. Dramatically lower rates and broaden the tax base by getting rid of the loopholes. That is the right winger. That is the view. We just cut the rates and broaden the tax base. Cut the rates and make sure everyone has skin in the game. Raise taxes on those poor people. And he says, look, you know, what Reagan and the Democrats did in 86, they invented. Simpson-Bowles validated and the Gang of Six endorsed. He says, look, but in the upcoming talks on the fiscal cliff, we got to scrap that idea. Got to scrap it. He said the old style of tax reform is obsolete in the 2012 world. Just doesn't fit. He says the old style is going to make things worse. It's going to make inequality worse. And it's what I've been saying from the beginning, but the reality is there's no push for this. Because the big money wants another tax reform bill of 86. They want another handout. They want that rate lowered again. And of course, well, the rate on, you know, the bottom of the economy, anyone making under $30,000 a year, they want that rate to go up. You know, you 47% of the people who get up every day, go to work, bust your behind, but don't make enough money to pay federal tax, they're coming for you. Because you're a sloth. You're a weight on the good people of society, according to them. And, you know, you look at all of the push. This Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President of Policy at the Third Way, supposedly a centrist Democratic group, who said Schumer's speech puts him squarely in the get-a-deal camp. He's willing to put entitlements on the table. And, you know, I tell you what entitlements should be on the table? All of this money that we're handing away to these big corporations. Those are the entitlements that should be on the table. And you look at these business groups and these industry groups who are now pushing this fix the debt campaign. They're, according to the New York Times, this group, Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, they've raised somewhere around $30 million, and they're hoping to triple that. I got an idea. Why don't we take that, since they seem to have a lot of excess cash, and pay down our debt? Just a thought. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
It's out. This year's list of American success stories has just been published, and according to its compiler, it instills confidence that the American dream is still very much alive. Maybe you are one of these success stories. You might be a great public school teacher, for example, who motivated students to achieve new heights, or an inventor who came up with an energy-saving device and got it to market at a fair price, generating a profit for yourself, the environment, and society generally. No, not that kind of success. We're talking money, the flow of mammon beyond regular people's wildest dreams. That's how Forbes magazine measures not only success, but also a person's value. You are what's in your Swiss bank account. And just to rank last on this year's Forbes 400 listing of America's wealthiest people, you need more than $1 billion in financial wealth. The magazine gloated that these 400 swells jacked up their cumulative haul last year by $200 billion over the previous year, an average of $500 million each. Now that's success, baby, especially when the typical American family's income dropped by 4%. These ultra-wealthy, goes the Forbes narrative, are the deserving rich, for they are our economy's makers and producers, as opposed to being takers and moochers, like those commoners who get Social Security, Medicare, and other government help. Before swallowing that, however, note that roughly 40% of these achievers on the list achieve their wealth by being well-born. They inherited the money. And all of them have indeed been takers, not only enjoying government programs, but also subsidies and tax advantages available only to the rich. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Forbes list really says you got special treatment, not that you are special.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Our quote of the day comes from David Callahan in his piece, What About Inequality? He says, not mentioning inequality when talking about the plight of the middle class is like not mentioning poaching when discussing the future of elephants. And, you know, you think about it. That's a good analogy. I mean, because what's going on there? They're picking off the middle class every single day. Let's go to the phones. Got Ike on line one. How you doing tonight, Ike?
Yeah, brother. An age-old tactic, divide and conquer.
Yep.
You know?
I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half.
Exactly. Take a shot at it. Go and sign the Robinhood.org petition. Because I've been advocating exactly what you're talking about for a long time. I've never understood how it is that people that move money around to make money seem to think that they're above it all and they don't have to pay any sort of anything. And, you know, when it comes to, Wall Street, 1/10 of 1% is not much of a tax, and it'll generate billions on top of billions of dollars.
Now, as we have done in the past. I mean, the reality is this is not a new idea. This is something we used to do for years and years and years. And, you know, the wealth class invested in a number of politicians who got rid of it, and they got wealthy off of it. And you're right. I mean, our wealth class moving money from one pocket to the other is a hard day's work.
Right, and the average Wall Street trade that goes on is held for 23 seconds. That's a fact that I heard not long ago. But also what I was going to say was, you know, when it comes right down to it, you know, I don't know how you know, we used to have antitrust laws and whatever, and I watched that 60 Minutes Sunday, and it about floored me. I didn't realize that we don't even have an American manufacturer that's putting together the 4G network equipment.
Yep,
we've
one.
Only got one manufacturer left, Cisco.
Yep.
You know, and then they went and showed that eyeglass thing, and it turns out there's some gigantuan Luxottica that pretty much has the corner on that market.
Yeah, I mean, we've allowed these companies to grow so large that, you know, now they're impossible to rein in.
Yeah, and, you know, for all of this talk about globalism, our globalization, you know, listen, dude, you know, my local Burger King down here ain't got nothing to do with globalization. You know,
sure
it's
does.
Not like they're, well, it's not like they're facing, you know, a competitor in China that's going to eat their lunch.
True. I mean, on the service part of it, on the people who work there, and which is why we need to be pushing for laws to let those workers organize and get some of the profits that they create. Absolutely.
Well, I guess the overarching question would be this. You know, they sit there and complain about us 47 percenters or us people out here that are trying to scrape together a living or can't find a job or whatever or have a job and don't get paid. You know, you know my history. You know what I've been living through.
Yep.
Including 99 weeks worth of unemployment, which I was hoping the damn market would tighten up before I had to jump back into it, but it didn't. You know, they complain on that one hand, and then yet on the other hand, they complain that they can't pay but X number of dollars, so it's not their fault. You know, I don't know. You know, every time I go through this and I look at it and I try to dissect it, the way it looks to me is there's a war coming. It is going to have to be a war, period. And I mean a big one. And I'm not talking about no little, you know, little bitty action. I'm talking about this is going to have to go in this country. It'll have to go nationwide. And
yeah, globally, I mean, not just nationwide. Well, it's going to have to be global. I mean, and there are people who think Iran and the whole Middle East exploding is, you know, Syria and all of those countries. You know, that's all part of it. We're on the brink of World War III because I just had this conversation a couple of days ago where someone says, yeah, we need to kill off a billion people.
Yeah.
In just
kind
of a flippant manner, we got to kill off a billion people. This way the planet can be more sustainable.
Well, you know, I mean, there's some that argue that Mother Nature does it every once in a while, such as the plague and what have you. You know, I don't know if that's true, but as far as a man-made action, well, there's no two ways about it. They definitely got the power, and, you know, if you stop and think about China and you just stop and think about India, who have between the two of them about 3 billion people, can you imagine what kind of government it takes to try to keep or get people over there employed or get them out of poverty or give them a job? I mean, it's bad enough here. I don't see how any government can survive under the weight of those kind of numbers of people and how your economic system can support everybody, particularly if you look at the standard of living that we've set. Like I said before, you know, if all those people over there had 3-bedroom houses, 2-car garages, et cetera, there wouldn't be a piece of wood. There wouldn't be a rock left in the ground.
Which is why we have to be destroyed, Ike. I mean, which is why you and I, we've got to be pulled down to the level of the Chinese and the Indians where they are right now. We're an anomaly. The middle class in this country cannot possibly exist into the future. It just can't because, as you pointed out, the rest of the world looks to our working class and goes, that's what we want. We want to be them.
Yeah, it's a conundrum. Well, I guess I've got two choices, pack my stuff up and get my tent and go to the woods or see if I can immigrate and get over to the Scandinavian countries because they seem like they've got a pretty good system over there.
Yeah, good point. I appreciate the call, brother.
Thanks, buddy.
Always great talking to you. I got an email during the break from Bill. He writes, the average retiree lived 13 months after retirement in the early 50s. The conservatives hated Social Security in those days. They hated even more since folks collected longer. He says, Rick, these right-wing bleep, 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 give one a fear of eugenics if they can arrange it. And you know, you think about it, you know, I remember those movies from when I was a kid, Logan's Run, and some of the books that you read were at 35. They'd, you know, take you off and you'd be done away with. You know, that was the end of you because you outlived your usefulness. Kind of makes you wonder. Let's take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Ocean of Red, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Earth, sky. In August 2012, NASA launched a mission aimed at understanding the dynamic and erratic Van Allen belts surrounding our planet Earth.
The Van Allen belts are a torus, or ring, around Earth. Two donut-shaped regions full of high-energy particles held in place by Earth's magnetic field. They're home to killer electrons, plasma waves, and intense electrical currents that can disrupt the electronics on satellites.
This mission, called the Radiation Belt Storm Probes, has launched near the height of the Sun's 11-year cycle of activity. Sometimes a solar storm can swell the Van Allen belts with high-energy particles and energy. This creates havoc for Earth-orbiting satellites by accelerating electrons, what scientists call killer electrons, and creating electrical currents. Other times, the radiation belts grow very calm and depleted during sunstorms. Occasionally during a solar storm, scientists can't detect any change in the Van Allen belts.
Twin spacecraft will fly in separate orbits across the inner and outer Van Allen belts. They'll observe how and when killer electrons are energized, sample the electrical and magnetic fields that are present, count particles, and detect plasma waves of different frequencies.
The ultimate goal is to improve space weather forecasting. That is, how storms on the sun can cause geomagnetic storms that upset earthly telecommunications and electronics. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're earthsky.org.
I'm passionate about our economic liberty because I have witnessed our free enterprise system and rewards the hard work of many and creates prosperity for all in this great country. And over the past few weeks, we've seen a frontal assault on free enterprise.
Once I made you rich enough to forget my name, in Youngstown, in Youngstown.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. You know, again, I go back to this pension situation. where they it's all about privatization. It's all about separating professional people from workers' pensions. So that, again, it's just like any graft. It's like any ripoff. You separate folks from the herd. You get individuals so that they're easily manipulated. And I look at this story that they talked about, you know, wow, you know, what we need to do is shift to these defined contribution. Well, because they're better for us. Because the private sector, they went away from it. Because you know what? Those defined benefit plans, they're just not affordable. And, you know, as Steven Herzenberg said, the guy who's the executive director of the Keystone Research Center, when he was asked, you know, why'd the private sector move to the defined contribution plans? He said, look, they don't have to fund it? That's not hard. That's not a tough question. So they can rip people off? Yes. That's how they do it. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Andy on line one. How are you doing tonight, Andy?
Fine, Rick. How about yourself?
Oh, I can't complain. What's news?
Yeah, it's good to be alive, huh?
Every day above ground, brother.
You know, it's okay, though, with the defined benefit plans. The CEOs get those.
Oh, boy, don't they.
Right? But we get the defined contribution plans. And what really bothers me is both my grandfathers had defined benefit plans. My father had a defined benefit plan. But I'm going to have a plan that I'll probably never be able to retire on with this DCB plan, the defined contribution plan.
Yeah.
It don't work.
Nope. And, you know, I saw when we were listening to the testimony here in the Commonwealth, the House had their testimony. They said the average 401k in the country is about $18,000. I'm going, how is it you're going to retire on $18,000? It ain't going to happen.
You don't. Exactly. You work the rest of it. What am I supposed to be, a Wall Streeter that I can spend 100% of my time trying to beat the market and come in with good returns?
Well, that's what they want.
80% of Wall Street guys can't beat the index at all?
But it's more than that, Andy. It's what they want us thinking is they want us thinking Wall Street policy. What's good for Wall Street, what's good for the companies, what's good for the stock is good for us personally. And, you know, I've got these couple of shares and this is my future. And they want us thinking that way so that when the policies that they roll out benefit them and harm us, we think, well, it's still going to do okay by us because we're going to be able to reap the benefits in the end. And it doesn't work. There's no end to this.
That's baloney. Yeah, you're totally correct. It's total baloney. It's all about shifting the risk. It's shifting the risk from the employer to the employee. From them being responsible for coming out with a fixed amount of income for you every month, now it's your responsibility.
And also maximizing
the risk.
And also maximizing the profits into the few. I mean, this whole thing here in the Commonwealth where they want to get rid of, they want to change the state pension fund, basically is to break up Sears and Piecers, the people who administer the pensions for the state workers and the teachers, so that they can get them into individual accounts so they can go after individual state workers and individual teachers, and they can cheat the hell out of them. That's what it's really about.
Divide and conquer, and they'll kill you with the fees.
Yep.
And the economies of scale of being in a big fund, of having leverage over being able to buy and sell with large transactions at much lower cost, much lower commissions. Wall Street hates that, Rick.
No, they hate
the leverage a large state pension fund has over them because there's tremendous economies of scale. But what happens to those economies of scale with the small accounts, the retail? They go away. They make huge fees, huge commissions off the individual. But they can't do that with a large pension fund because you have the bargaining power.
Yep. And you've actually got professionals who are running.
Absolutely. Who know what they're doing because they're doing that 100% of the time.
Yep.
That's their job.
And that's what they hate. And also, you look at a lot of the union pension funds that the right absolutely hates, that invest in projects that create jobs and invest in projects that actually benefit workers and benefit society, so that, you know, you have the ability to have some leverage and some power in the market as well.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if you talked about this, but I sent you a article a while back. It was from September 2nd from Boston Consulting Group.
Right.
Showing how the wage disparity between China and the U.S. was collapsing. You know, we're going further down the road to the bottom with China. There was a 12% on average disparity cost gap, and now they figure it's going to be 7%. by 2015, so manufacturing should pick up here because of the lower cost. Again, race to the bottom.
Yep, and we're leading it. I mean, the whole idea is, as I said before, to Ike, you know, the reality is they want to pull us down so that we don't have a middle class anymore. There's no prosperity in working in this country.
They're killing us. They literally are killing us. You know, I want to bring up something, too, real quick. On our ballot in California, we have Proposition 30.
Mm-hmm.
It's done by Jerry Brown to try to it's going to up the taxes
right. On
the upper brackets and also put in place a sales tax so we actually have money in the coffers for the state so they can actually fund a decent education.
Right.
Instead of being 47th in the state, maybe we'll rise to the median or something like that within the country, within the 50 states. But anyway, there's this rich dude who inherited from his old, another inheritance baby named Charles Johnson from, you ever hear of Franklin Templeton Funds?
I have, yes.
Or Franklin Resources? Right here in San Mateo, close by to where I live. He inherited that from his old man who was a Wall Streeter. Here's a kid that inherited those funds from his old man. He went to Yale, and he's put in $200,000 to fight that proposition on the ballot because his state taxes will go up 2%. So he dropped $200,000 into it, and now there's a couple million dollars fighting against that proposition because you know what? He doesn't want to pay taxes, so our kids here get a decent education and we have a decent society to live in. Why is he in this country? Why is a guy like Charles Johnson even here? And the guy probably hasn't worked a day in his goddamn life because he inherited everything he's got.
Huh?
Everything. Yale grad, old man Wall Streeter, and he inherited those funds, and he probably is a billionaire, but he can't pay a 2% more in taxes because he doesn't want to give a rat, you know, patootie about our society. These are the people that are killing us. It is a class war.
I absolutely agree with you, Andy. I appreciate the call, brother. You're spot on, as always. Thanks so much. These are the conversations, and this is the stuff that's got to go out. You know, the reality is what it is. And as he pointed out, you know, these wealthy, you know what, they're going to spend every dime they've got to make sure that, you know what, they don't have to pay. Because we've given them all of this power. We've given them all this wealth. And in the next hour, we're going to talk with Greg Palast about his book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps, which is why they're spending so much money on this election, why they're spending so much money on politics, because they understand if you control the government, if you control the arm of we the people, you've got it made. You've got it. You've got it in your pocket. If you missed any portion of the first hour, ricksmithshow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast, or Stitcher. Quick break, right back after this with hour two. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. From the top.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
I was sitting in the street in front of the semi. I was nervous. I was so nervous. And I stood in front of the truck, and he kept trying to go through us. But we weren't going down without a fight.
16-year-old Carrie Peniston, who was arrested Monday at the Sensata plant in Freeport, Illinois, trying to stop Mitt Romney's Bain Capital from shipping her mom's job to China. Sensata workers losing their jobs to China in November have set up a tent city called Bainport near the plant in Freeport, Illinois. They've repeatedly called on Mitt Romney to meet with them and help save their jobs. He has ignored them. Carrie, though, is determined to fight on and knows what she would tell Mitt Romney if she ever gets the chance.
I would look him straight in the eye. I'd be firm. I'd be assertive about it. I'm not going to give up. I think if I were to talk to him, I would want to convince him to save my mom's job and not take it to China.
National Nurses United says nurses at Veterans Administration medical centers across the country have overwhelmingly voted to ratify a national contract. The union says it's a master agreement unprecedented in its protections of patients' care standards and for strengthening the voice of RNs in the care of America's veterans. RNs with National Nurses United have now gained their first national contract in the VA system. Staffing issues were front and center in the contract. National Nurses United says this first national contract in the VA system has many improvements for RNs and for patients. The union represents RNs at 22 VA facilities. Strike fever is spreading in South Africa. Jesse Russell explains why.
Government workers in South Africa could soon be on strike. Nearly 75,000 mine workers have been on strike in the African nation since August, and on Monday, a union representing government workers said that public sector workers could soon be walking off their jobs. Workers represented by the South African Municipal Workers Union would be demanding market-related salaries if they walk off the job this week. Currently, the strike is expected to be a one-day show of force, as well as solidarity with striking mine workers. But the union has said it could be extended depending on circumstances. Workers at platinum mines were the first to go on strike, followed weeks later by workers at gold and iron mines. Truck workers have also been striking for nearly 3 weeks, and that has led to fuel shortages in rural areas of the country. If the strike actions continue, it's likely rail and port workers will also be going out on strike October 15th.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union, and by the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I couldn't make a statement in all good faith and say to you that there is no voter fraud in the United States and there's no voter fraud in Pennsylvania.
Fluffy unicorns dancing on rainbows. Pink fluffy unicorns dancing on rainbows.
Pink. And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, set on your mind. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. In this hour, we're going to be talking about how we make sure that we protect our vote, how it is we protect our public land, and the whole privatization push that's going to be going on. And, you know, where's the money going? We're going to talk about the Walmart strikes that are going on across the country. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Before we get to that, I've got Greg Palast on the line, author of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. It is on sale now. Get it. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com how you can get this book. Greg, great talking to you again, brother.
Hey, glad to be with you.
So how are they going to do it this time? I know you've documented in the past how the post-mortem in Best Democracy Money Can Buy. How are they doing it this time?
Well, this time they're going to use the old methods and some new ones. So that's why we call it the Billionaires Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. By the way, the reason I say we is that I wrote the book. I'm the principal author, but Bobby Kennedy wrote a couple key chapters, and Ted Rall wrote drew a 50-page comic book, which we have in the middle of it. So they're going to do it by purging, tossing, prestidigitizing, caging. Can't name them all. You have to look at the book. But for example, if you're a lot of people know me as the guy. Though Greg Palast is the guy who uncovered how Catherine Harris knocked off tens of thousands of voters off the voter rolls, calling them felons, remember?
Yep. And my
black
favorite
people,
one.
And it's true, they were guilty of voting while black. The so-called felon purge is back, and it is just as stinky, rotten, and, you know, they're using spreadsheets instead of white sheets, but it's lynching by laptop. Tens of thousands of people, not one of them, and I want to repeat this, Rick, not a single one of them are illegal voters, but almost all of them are black. We're not guessing because next to their names in Florida, it says BLA if you're black. And so we know. For example, in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, I show the new purge list, and it includes, like, there's a guy who was convicted of a crime named Robert Moore. Believe it or not, there's a lot of Robert Moores in Florida, and if they're black, they're losing their vote. But one that particularly caught my eye was Bobby Moore. They have an algorithm which says, aha, Bobby must be Robert.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, so Mr. Robert Moore commits a crime, and Mrs. Bobby, B-O-B-B-I, Moore, black woman, has lost her vote in Florida. That's how they're playing the game nationwide. That's just, the purge is just one of nine gimmicks. And we're looking at, in 2008, 5.9 million votes were stolen. And Kennedy and I are looking at doubling that this year easily.
Wow. One of my favorite votes that got stolen, and you pointed it out in your book, Best Democracy Money Can Buy, is the guy who, this was about the 2000 election, about a guy who was thrown off the rolls for a crime he was going to commit in 2007.
Right. Well, right now we have a woman who also is named Moore, by the way, another Bobby Moore, who is convicted of a crime in the year 2052.
Oh,
so the you know, it's you know, and they know it. No one calls them out on this. And you know what I've done is, you know, and the New York Times has finally taken note that of the fake felon purge. They didn't notice when I reported it in 2000. But now they say the lists are flawed. It's not flawed, you flunky fools. It is fraudulent from top to bottom. I went over the list with the Attorney General of Florida. And I said, if there's a fraudulent voter on here, would you arrest them? Yeah, I said, well, here's your state's list, tens of thousands of people. How many have you arrested? He said they had six open cases out of 94,000 people that they were removing, and not one conviction. These are not fraudulent voters. They're black voters, and no one will defend them. And same with the so-called alien voters. We see, Arizona, there's no question in my mind that the Republicans are going to steal the Senate race in Arizona. Given the demographic profile of the Arizona voter these days, the Republicans don't stand a chance. But in fact, they've knocked off 200,000 people saying that they're illegal alien voters. Now, come on. How many illegal aliens give their name and address to the state? And if they're really illegal alien voters, how come they haven't arrested any?
Yeah,
you tell me.
That's the thing that always got me. People say, well, they got welfare and they get this. I go, you're going to be here illegally in this country and you're going to go voluntarily and give all your information of where you'll be so they can come pick you up? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't pass the common sense test.
Yeah, well, and that's very, very important to understand. I keep saying I'm not for fraudulent voting. If there's a fraudulent voter, arrest them. But they don't, for the very simple reason that they've only been able to convict six people of fraudulent voting a year in America, and there are 6 million voters minimum who lose their vote hunting for this fraudulent voter. And so what it is, but it's not just anyone's vote. That's the point. For example, officially, then this is the official number, 1.4 million votes were cast and not counted in 2008. They were spoiled. There's a glitch or some crap like that. And in, by the way, in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, we have all the numbers from the government in the first chapter. And, you know, we do this. It's not a guidebook. It's kind of, it's weirdly fun and humorous, as you would imagine the discussion of the death of democracy would be. But 1.4 million votes spoiled. You don't spoil a vote by leaving it out of the refrigerator. You spoil it because there's supposedly a missed mark on it that where the machine can't read it. Well, if you're African-American, the chance your vote will spoil is 900% higher than if you're white, because they give black voters crap schools, crap hospitals, crap voting machines, and they know it. That's how the system's working. And that's what elected our president in 2000. 2004 was a gimmick called caging. And 2008, they stole 6 million votes, but it wasn't enough. And 2012, look out. And I expect 10 Senate races to be stolen.
Wow, that high. I mean, you know, and I look at this, and, you know, here in this state, I don't think you've got a they've got a chance of stealing the Senate race here. I think Tom Smith is so badly beaten. But this thing with Romney, I don't know. You look at the voter suppression law that they tried to ram through here that our court turned back for this election only. And again, it's just another one of these states that have gone after poor people, especially, you know, black folks, minorities, seniors, students, any person who would not vote for the angry white guy.
Well, look, it's real simple. If you look at Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, and by the way, the book is small and quick, and it has the comic book, but it also, by the way, has what I'll describe later, our ballot condom. But you take Pennsylvania, where the court said, oh, you can't have this ID law. But one of the things they pointed out is this gimmick called provisional ballot. The judge picked this one out because he said, oh, you come in, you have the wrong ID, we'll give you a provisional ballot. And he said, the vote is the people lose their civil rights when they fill out these provisional ballots. A provisional ballot is a placebo, bogus, bouncing, baloney ballot. It was created by Karl Rove under something called the Help America Vote Act. Now, Karl Rove tells you he's going to help you vote.
Watch out. Yep.
We have a whole chapter on placebo ballots, on provisional ballots. 767,000 provisional ballots were cast in 08 and weren't counted. Let me repeat that. 750,000 provisional ballots were cast not counted. Because here's the gimmick. If you complain, hey, my ID is correct. Oh, don't worry, fill out this provisional ballot and we'll check. No, they don't. They throw them in the garbage. Because you have a right to a provisional ballot, but you don't have the right to have it counted. They know that. That's just to get you out of there.
Yep.
Which is why you don't accept a provisional ballot. You demand adjudication. You vote early. And whatever you do, don't go postal. Don't mail in your ballot. Okay? Please.
So how else should we protect our vote? I mean, you know, most people go, there's all this information out there trying to suppress the vote. They're going to challenge me online. They're going to harass. They're going to intimidate. They're going to send out BS mailers that say we've changed the vote again this year to a different day. How do people protect themselves? How do we make sure that we get our ballot count?
Okay, at the back of billionaires and ballot bandits, there we have a tear out, a leaflet called 7 Ways to Beat the Ballot Bandit. And it's 7 basic things we call, it's kind of the reason I call it the ballot condom, it's for safe voting. And we tell you 7 basic things to try to protect your vote and those you know and others. And like, for example, don't mail in your ballot. People say, oh, well, they've got electronic voting machines, they can switch numbers. But you think these people are going to do something complex, like mess with the software, but you're going to just mail them your ballot and assume that they're going to count it. What planet are you on, guys? If you mailed in your vote in the last election, do you know if it was counted? Let me give you the official number. 488,000 ballots were cast and were mailed in and never counted. 488,000 ballots. Now, that's my number from the raw data. MIT says I'm off by a factor of like 3 million. They say 3 million absentee ballots were junked.
Wow.
Now, whose ballots? That, once again, we get back to the point of the for example, they use a system called caging in billionaires and ballot bandits. Oh, by the way, if you want the leaflet, the ballot bandits, the billionaires and ballot bandits, ballot condom, and you don't want to get the book or you can't get the book right now, at least go to ballotbandits.org and download the free poster we have or the leaflet, reproduce it, send it around. We're not selling this book to make money. It's all being put out by a not-for-profit foundation. So the idea is to just save the vote here. And by the way, we're not partisan. I don't care, you know, vote whichever way you want. I just want the guy that is inaugurated to be the guy that got the vote. And that doesn't look too good right now. Okay, that's looking real bad. And plus we got a guy named Karl Rove out there and 2 guys named David and Charles Koch. We're spending an awful lot of money to make sure your absentee ballot does not get counted.
And not just your absentee ballot, most of the other ones as well, and you don't have access to it either.
Well, in fact, the Karl Rove has something called the Data Trust, data mining system. The Koch brothers have funded something called the Themis data mining system. And one of the characters, billionaires and ballot bands, a guy named Paul Singer, who's the main donor for Mitt Romney, has put them together, has gotten Rove and the Kochs, who were kind of competing against each other, now to coordinate. So between Themis and Data Trust, between Karl Rove, you know, the guy that George Bush nicknamed Turd Blossom, between Mr. Blossom and the Koch brothers, look out for your ballot. One of the gimmicks that we've caught Karl Rove at is something called caging. It's one of the 9 ways that they steal the vote. What they do is, what Rove did, and I've got this because I got his internal email, which, by the way, this action was verified, this criminal activity was verified by John Conyers and the Judiciary Committee investigators. Karl Rove operation sent out tens of thousands of letters to new voters, African-American voters especially, letters which were first class, do not forward, sent it to their registration addresses. When the letters came back, he challenged those voters as voting from fraudulent addresses. Now, that may sound sensible. I mean, if you're not at your registration address and it can't be delivered to you, then you must be a fraudulent voter, unless you hear who they sent it to.
In August,
he sent them to students at black colleges who were away for summer vacation.
Right.
It's not against the law. You don't lose your vote, your civil rights, because you're on vacation. He sent them, by the way, to Jewish voters, elderly Jewish voters in Miami, who are generally Jewish, bluish voters, you know, Democratic voters, in August. They're snowbirds. They're going up to visit their grandchildren. They lost their vote. And this is my really wonderful one. If you look in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, you will see one list, one so-called cagey list, where every single voter is from the Jacksonville Naval Air Station. Karl Rove was sending letters to active duty soldiers at their military bases, and when those letters came back undeliverable, because he wrote, do not forward,
yep,
he challenged their vote. You're talking, here's the Republican Party challenging the vote of soldiers not at their military base. Why? Where do you think they are, Mr. Rove? You know, it's not illegal for a soldier to vote from under a Humvee in Afghanistan, even if they're a black soldier. And I talked to one of those soldiers, and he said, well, I got the vote. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I mailed in my ballot. I said, yeah, you mailed in your ballot. Do you know if it was counted? He said, I don't know. I said, you were on the challenge list. It wasn't counted. You don't. It's a crime that you don't even catch because you don't even know it's happened to you. And Bobby Kennedy, who wrote the intro to Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, says, this is a crime. Karl Rove should be in jail.
I agree.
Now, Bobby Kennedy is the dean of the law school at Pace University. He doesn't say these things, you know, just off the top of his head. He said, this is a go-to-jail crime. A go-to-jail crime. And, by the way, that crime cost Bob Kerry the presidency. And I will say that unlike Al Gore, who hid after the theft of the election 2000, Kerry did, he said, after he read my book, he now is convinced that the election was stolen. And these are the ways that they stole it. It's going to happen again unless we are awake and alive. It's not about Obama.
Right.
It's about democracy.
Absolutely. It's about the right to the franchise. But here's the thing. If you say that John Kerry now sees that the vote was stolen, why hasn't he done anything to stop this? I mean, the Republicans have pushed this savior of the ballot box, the sanctity of the ballot box with these photo ID laws, with these suppression laws. But haven't gone after, as you pointed out, the real fraud. Why haven't the Democrats offered that legislation? Why haven't we seen a push for that?
Well, actually, in all fairness to John Kerry, he and Ted Kennedy, before he passed away, put in a bill to make caging illegal. Now, it's already illegal, but you have to prove that they had there's a racial bias in their caging. And after all, their claim is that they're just going after Democrats, which is, they say that's legal. So he tries to say, if you had knowingly challenged the right of a legal voter like an active duty soldier to vote, that should be a crime on its face. So Kerry has done that, but the problem is the Democratic Party, you can't count on the Democratic Party to protect your vote. That's our job. You know, if you're going to count on any politician of any party to protect your vote, forget about it, Jack. It just doesn't work that way. There's all kinds of reasons I describe in the book why Democrats don't go after the vote suppression in the way that they ought to. And you look at ID laws. Finally, the Justice Department is beginning to say no to these changes in ID laws. But they were silent when Indiana switched it, that required a state photo ID to vote. Now, you have to understand, state photo ID in Indiana, the reason you have a voter ID, and I have a chapter in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits called Nuns on the Run. In Indiana, 10 nuns were denied the right to vote. Okay? 10 nuns were denied the right to vote because they didn't have their driver's licenses when they went to vote, which is good because they ranged from 88 to 98 years old. Now, that led to the Supreme Court dealing with this because they said it was racial. Because 87,000 African Americans in Indiana, which Obama won by a whisker last time, would now lose their vote. And they will now lose their vote because they don't have, you know, they don't have their passport from their ski trip in the Alps.
Right.
Indiana we think of as farmers and music man, but the entire northern tier is substantially African American, a kind of extension of Chicago industrial belt.
Right. Gary and all that area.
Gary and Burns Harbor, the old steel area. And what's happened is that the Scalia said, well, you only have to go 17 miles to get a non-driver ID.
Yeah, just 17 miles.
Now, again, if you don't have a driver's license, that's kind of hard. And he said it's not racial because it's 17 miles if you're black or you're white. Now, I do know because Greg Palast, I'm an investigative reporter, and we found out, and I kid you not, that Scalia drives a black BMW. So what I think he meant is that whether you have a black BMW or a white BMW, 17 miles is like nothing.
There you go.
There you go.
Excellent point. The book is Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps, gregpalast.com, the website where you can get it. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Greg, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, Rick. Thank you for protecting us. I really mean that. Bye.
Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. And I ain't taking money. All they want to do is. And I ain't taking money. All they want to do is. And I ain't taking money. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record-keeping and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller, CPA, and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you, too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check them out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com. And take the worry out of tax time.
It's out. This year's list of American success stories has just been published, and according to its compiler, it instills confidence that the American dream is still very much alive. Maybe you are one of these success stories. You might be a great public school teacher, for example, who motivated students to achieve new heights, or an inventor who came up with an energy-saving device and got it to market at a fair price, generating a profit for yourself, the environment, and society generally. No, 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 not that kind of success. We're talking money, the flow of mammon beyond regular people's wildest dreams. That's how Forbes magazine measures not only success, but also a person's value. You are what's in your Swiss bank account. And just to rank last on this year's Forbes 400 listing of America's wealthiest people, you need more than $1 billion in financial wealth. The magazine gloated that these 400 swells jacked up their cumulative haul last year by $200 billion over the previous year, an average of $500 million each. Now that's success, baby, especially when the typical American family's income dropped by 4%. These ultra-wealthy, goes the Forbes narrative, are the deserving rich, for they are our economy's makers and producers, as opposed to being takers and moochers, like those commoners who get Social Security, Medicare, and other government help. Before swallowing that, however, note that roughly 40% of these achievers on the list achieve their wealth by being well-born. They inherited the money. And all of them have indeed been takers, not only enjoying government programs, but also subsidies and tax advantages available only to the rich. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Forbes list really says you got special treatment, not that you are special.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
John, there's a real difference between venture capitalism and vulture capitalism. The fact of the matter is that he's going to have to face up to this at some time or another.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire. The Ring of Fire.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Our stat of the day from the Too Much Online blog, the typical American middle-class family would have to work 82,411 years to earn enough to equal the average billionaire fortune on the latest Forbes 400 richest list put out by Forbes magazine. 82,411 years the average American middle-class family would have to work. Is that possible? Let's see. The average lifespan is, what, about 77 years? I mean, it's mind-blowing. You're talking about almost over 10,000 lifespans. Yeah, that's equality at its finest, don't you think? Just leaves me shaking my head, going, you know, it's amazing to me that we've been bamboozled this easily. I mean, I have heard all of the arguments why we need to suppress the vote, why we need, well, you know, there are people who are voting and this and that. Everybody should be able to vote. And you go, you think about today of all days, 2004, we've spent lives in treasury and our future getting the right to vote for the Afghans. Today, back in 2004, they elected their president. Yet, we're doing everything we can do. And I look at this thing, this seven ways to beat the ballot bandits that Palace puts out, what he's calling the voter's condom. He's right. You know, don't mail in the ballots. You know, go in person. Make sure you cast your vote. He's saying in places where you can, vote early. Get there early, make sure that you have your proper paperwork, whatever you need to be able to cast that ballot, and if they give you a hard time, you raise a stink, and make sure you're registered. And, you know, too late now, today was the last day, but you gotta make sure that you're registered. Don't be saddled with a provisional ballot. Look out Ohio, look out Nevada, it's coming after you. I like the fact that he says date a voter. You know, make sure that you bring five people, 10 people. Bring people with you. And, you know, make sure that, you know, we demand our democracy and we leave no voter behind. We leave no vote on the table. And he's right. I mean, at the end of this, what we should be talking about is making sure that everybody's vote is counted. And I don't care who you're voting for, as long as you get out there. I wish we had 100% voter participation. I wish we were a society that encouraged that. Where we had a week long to go and vote, or we had a system where you had a mail-in like they have in Oregon, where you have much higher participation. To me, that's the only way that self-governance works. Not a system where we have the handful who have so much dictating to everyone else, paying their billionaires to tell the middle class why the poor people are screwing us. And that's what's going on. You've got these billionaires who are paying these millionaire mouthpieces to tell folks like you and me why we should hate those poor people. It's ridiculous. And the Romney comment, oh, those 47%, you know, those minimum wage workers, those people who served you your lunch, those people who cleaned your hotel room, those people who sweep the streets and do most of the jobs that are out there today, those are the 47% that Romney was saying he didn't care about. And we come back and talk about what's going on around the country. This thing at Walmart, I'm hoping catches fire. I'm hoping to see more people in the streets. I'm hoping to see more community groups and more religious groups coming around and standing up for low-wage workers and socioeconomic justice. Quick break. Back after this.
So let's don't pretend.
thinking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Are you feeling that back-to-school squeeze? Backpacks, clothes, shoes, all the things they have to have because last year's stuff is so last year? If you have a supply shortage, we can help. We know what it's like, and we've got the ultimate hall pass for you. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate, good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
In August 2012, NASA launched a mission aimed at understanding the dynamic and erratic Van Allen belts surrounding our planet Earth.
The Van Allen belts are a torus, or ring, around Earth, two donut-shaped regions full of high-energy particles held in place by Earth's magnetic field. They're home to killer electrons, plasma waves, and intense electrical currents that can disrupt the electronics on satellites.
This mission, called the Radiation Belt Storm Probes, has launched near the height of the Sun's 11-year cycle of activity. Sometimes a solar storm can swell the Van Allen belts with high-energy particles and energy. This creates havoc for Earth-orbiting satellites by accelerating electrons, what scientists call killer electrons, and creating electrical currents. Other times, the radiation belts grow very calm and depleted during sunstorms. Occasionally during a solar storm, scientists can't detect any change in the Van Allen belts.
Twin spacecraft will fly in separate orbits across the inner and outer Van Allen belts. They'll observe how and when killer electrons are energized, sample the electrical and magnetic fields that are present, count particles, and detect plasma waves of different frequencies.
The ultimate goal is to improve space weather forecasting. That is, how storms on the sun can cause geomagnetic storms that upset earthly telecommunications and electronics. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
Ladies, cream the name, I raise the name.
To Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz, the six Walmart heirs, the sperm lottery winners, if you will, they now hold some $70 billion in wealth, which Stiglitz is saying equals nearly the bottom third of American households. So we're talking six people with as much wealth as a third of the nation. What is that, about 100 million people? All of those people, the entire third, they're at the bottom of the 47% that Mitt Romney says he could care less about. Oh, well, I'm sorry. He now cares. Remember, he had that grand conversion. He cares. And I'm sure if we wait a couple of minutes, I guarantee that will change back again. But at the end of this, what I say has to happen is exactly what's going on. And I've been calling for this for years. These folks, they need to stand together, and they need to get out in the streets, boots on the ground. They need to be screaming, hollering, carrying on. Picketing if they have to, protesting, and getting all of these social groups together, all of these consumer groups, and especially the religious community. The religious community that I grew up with, the Catholic Church that believed in peace and socioeconomic justice. which is why I've asked Father Ray Lesher of the Sacred Heart Church in Joliet, Illinois, to come talk to us. He was one of the folks recently arrested during one of these actions out there in Elwood, Illinois. Father, thanks for taking time for me.
It's great to be here.
You know, I look at these scenarios, and I look at six people with as much wealth as a third of the country. There's something seriously wrong with that.
Yeah, it's an absolute obscenity. It really is. So we're trying to change that by attacking Walmart, and we were very successful last Monday. We had a magnificent march. We had over 600 people that showed up. People came from all over the country, especially a lot of labor leaders. The man that was next to me when we got arrested, he was the head of the electrical union out of Pittsburgh. We had people from New York. We had people from North Carolina. We marched in a park. We walked to the warehouse, 600 of us, Walmart. They were so scared of us, they closed the two plants. They have over two humongous plants. One is the largest warehouse in the world. They closed both of them. So we marched around in front of their entrance, and then 17 of us just sat down right in the middle of the street. So we were given a 5-minute warning that we would be arrested. And sure enough, out comes the Will County SWAT team.
SWAT team?
Talking about overkill. They had their riot gear on. We were warned we might be chemically maced. They also had some kind of a government truck that could emit all kind of sound waves that blow the wax out of our ears or whatever.
Thanks to our time in Iraq, we now have these kind of toys to take care of the American populace. So that's good news, right?
Yes. And so make a long story short, 17 of us were arrested. And the reason we marched was that 2 weeks previous, 30 gutsy, brave workers said, "We've had enough," because of the lousy pay, because of wage theft, because of dangerous conditions in the warehouse, because of extreme heat. There's no air conditioning in those places, and there's no heat in the winter. 30 of them walked out. Walmart fired them immediately, obviously, and they were picketing every day, so we joined them. And make a long story short, the 30 were rehired the day after our march.
Outstanding.
They were given back pay for 3 weeks. They were promised they and others would be given some kind of a shin guard because half the forklifts, the brakes don't work in the damn warehouse, which means that people are stopping these things by running into other workers.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, that's true. And then they also promised to put fans in. When it was 100, 104, we had a very extremely hot summer like everybody else in the country did. In those trailers, those 53-foot trailers, it's 120 degrees in those trailers.
Oh, I know. I've spent years working in them as well, and I know how hot they can be. But you know, especially when you're talking about an enclosed warehouse as well.
Yes, and so you know, you sweat like a pig in the summer, and then in the winter you freeze.
Yep.
So we're a part of a Warehouse Workers for Justice. I'm on the board. The Warehouse Workers for Justice started out 3.5 years ago with 4 staff. They rented a room that we have in our hall, and I joined right away. And in these 3.5 years, we have a labor lawyer out of Chicago, Chris, and we filed 11 lawsuits in federal court, all kind of wage theft, cheating people on overtime, sexual harassment, which is rampant. If you're a woman, you get a double whammy. And so we filed 11 lawsuits, 6 against Walmart. And we 4 of the cases have been decided, and we have gained through the courts over $1 million in lost wages that have come back to some of the workers.
Good for you.
Unfortunately, the politicians here in Will County, whether it's Republican or Democrat, their heads are in the sand. Will County is the third largest inland container port in the world, next to Hong Kong, Singapore, and Will County. We got over 300 of these things. We have 30,000 workers in these warehouses. And we did a study, the University of Chicago. 62% of these workers are temp workers. And temp agencies are the new payday loan agencies. And they just rob the people something fierce. So it's poverty wages, $8.25 an hour, no benefits. And we've exposed this. And but even with the lawsuits, we said we got to escalate this thing. So that's why we marched, and that's why 17 of us were arrested. Again, we got great press, and Walmart did blink. You know, the battle goes on.
Yeah, I mean, this is one more battle in the war, because at the end of the day, you know, I look at Chicago especially, you would think, being the hub of the country, I mean, wherever the gateway from one end of the country to the other, that you would have the leverage to make sure that all of those warehouse jobs would pay a decent family-sustaining wage, something, maybe some benefits, some strong union protection, something. But the more I'm looking into this, not so much.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. And that's why I say it's the politicians, both Democrats and Republicans, they keep bragging about jobs are coming. 2,000 jobs are coming. They're building this Center Point 1 is just a humongous area. Now we have Center Point 2, and they keep saying jobs are coming, jobs are coming. And my whole point is, hey, what kind of jobs?
Absolutely.
These are not living wage jobs. And that's why I'm so proud to be with the Workhouse Workers for Justice, which is being sponsored by the Electrical Union out of Chicago, because that's the only voice in this community calling out for living wage jobs, which is going back to Rerum Novarum, 1891 Catholic social justice teaching. And they're living it. And so it's an exciting time. And, you know, we know that there was a strike out in the California. West Coast, California. Some of the workers just walked right out of the stores. I know there's a group on the East Coast that's organizing also. So, I mean, there is some life. We got a pulse, and we just got to keep building on that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, and I got to be honest with you. I'm happy to see some in the Catholic Church returning to the roots that I grew up with, because when I was a kid growing up in the Catholic Church, it was all about peace and social justice. You know, the priest was talking about, you know, how do we make sure that workers have rights? And it's, you know, for too long, the religious community, in my view, has not been the champion of workers, the champion of the downtrodden. We hear this nonsense all the time. We're a Christian nation. What I'm looking at, I'm not seeing it. I'm missing it. How we can give so much to so few and really stick it to so many.
Yeah. Well, I agree 1,000% with what you're saying. And, you know, the greatest honor for a priest, Catholic priest, back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, was to be called a labor priest. I mean, that was the greatest honor a priest could receive. And so whether it was Monsignor Higgins of Washington, or you had Monsignor Rice out there in Pittsburgh, I mean, we had Jack Egan here in Chicago. I mean, these men were giants, and they were giants because they stood with the working class people, fighting for unions, fighting for a decent pay, fighting for safe work environments, etc., all the accomplishments of the unions. And sadly, I mean, you know, sadly today, we say preferential option for the poor, and that sounds great, but you don't see much of it.
Yeah, you know, what bothers me is, you know, you look at all of the work, and one of my hopes that for the president when he took office, that he'd be the guy who saved work, give people the right to collective bargaining, the right to join and form unions collectively, and the fight for the wages, better hours, better conditions, because, you know, you look at this, six people with the wealth of $100 million. There's just something wrong with that, and especially when they use that wealth to push down and to continue to hold those workers down, as we've seen Walmart do globally, not just here in the U.S.
Yes. Well, I mean, you take those six people and with their $70 billion, and so, okay, each of them can you know, give up five of their $70 billion and give their million workers a living wage with health care benefits and everything else. I mean, it's corporate greed. It's greed at its worst. And yep. It's the 1%, and they are classic examples of the 1%.
Let me ask you a last line of question I've got for you. The place where all of these warehouses are, you know, some of them that I've seen are their own little islands. They get their own special tax breaks. They get their own, you know, they get free subsidies.
Oh, yeah. They get subsidies and everything else, tax breaks, subsidies from the government officials. In fact, our state senator, he got him $20 million to start this Center Point One. I mean, and that's why we're going after the politician and say, look, when they sign these contracts with you, at least put the hammer on them and say, look, I mean, you got to obey what labor laws we do have, sexual harassment training, you name it, or else take away those tax breaks.
Yeah, I mean, where I grew up in Cleveland, you know, I remember back during the 80s, Voinovich was mayor, and they were handing out huge tax breaks, huge subsidies, free power, free sewer, free water, free everything to these corporations.
To get them there.
Yep.
We're doing the same thing here.
And I look at the school districts in my hometown that have just crumbled and are in such bad disarray, and now are up for the privatizers to come in and swoop up the remains and profitize what was a great system at one time. That we've allowed to be defunded and destroyed.
I agree with you. I do. I mean, it's an outrage, and you know, and hopefully more and more and more and more and more people are going to see it, be angry, and stop shopping at Walmart. Stop shopping at Sam's Club.
And that's the hope, Father. Father Ray Lusher, I appreciate the time. Thank you for your work. Thank you for your fight and your courage. I appreciate the time.
Great. Well, God bless you and keep up your work too, okay?
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits, BBS Benefit Solutions, can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record keeping and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller, CPA, and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you, too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check him out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com, and take the worry out of tax time.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
When you can't stop the sound of the truth, I'll talk to you about the Rick. Why can't lick my face?
You can't kill the processes.
Thank you.
You can't kill the process.
Yeah, here we are. You know, right back, you know, 100 years ago. I mean, I remember, I was talking to a guy who, you know, Dick Boyd is his name. He was the head of the labor council down in, I think it was York. He had written a book, and in his book he talks about his father. And Dick, I think, Dick's in his mid-90s right now. You know, a fascinating guy. But he talks about, you know, going to these labor, labor meetings under the railroad bridge at midnight so the boss didn't know this, you know, because back then, you know, 100 years ago, 90 years ago, you could kill for this. And you stop and you think about, you know, how far we've come as a nation, only to see it, well, a lot of it going back. And I give these workers in Chicago and in California and in Dallas, Texas. Later we're going to talk to a woman from Dallas and, you know, all across this country who are standing up to this behemoth, who are standing up to these big, powerful companies and saying, you know what? We want to get paid for all the hours we work. We want to get paid at least the minimum wage, preferably a living wage. And I look at this priest and, you know, the workers there saying, you know, we want to have some reasonable standards, something, a living wage paid for the hours that we work, you know, like the law says, maybe a regular schedule so we can be with our family. Safe workplaces where we don't have to stop forklifts with our legs. I mean, that just blows my mind. No brakes on the forklifts. A 7 to 10,000 pound forklift. You're going to stop with your leg. Sounds, which I guess is not surprising that it has an injury. 20% of the workforce reports being injured. No surprise there for me. And I look at this and I go, you know, in this day and age, that kind of warehouse work, which is back-breaking physical labor, $8 an hour, $8.50 an hour, are you kidding me? With no benefits? Temp work at that? And you look at the reality, the numbers that I saw, 4% of temp workers have health insurance. 4%. 5% have any paid sick time. I mean, think about it. You think about the numbers, and, you know, we keep hearing about, well, you know, that 47%, those worthless people, these are the 47%. These are the people who need government assistance to help put food on the table. They're the ones who need government health care because, you know what, their employers don't pay it. But, you know, these are lazy people, right? These are lazy, Rick. They don't want to work. No, they're working in some of the crappiest conditions in this country. And there's no one to protect them. And he's right. I mean, you know, this is where the Democratic Party, and over the weekend, we did the screening of We're Not Broke, the movie. We'renotbrokemovie.com, the website. We had a good showing. I had a good conversation afterwards. And But what I talked about, because I had the opportunity to, you know, stand up and facilitate the discussion, you know, what my point was is, look, you know, as Democrats, as a Democratic Party, they need to be the people who champion workers' rights. They need to be the progressive, not the corporate Democrats who will go along with whatever the Walmarts of the world want. No, the people who are going to stand up for the downtrodden, going to stand up for the low-wage worker and say, you know what, we're going to have a living wage. We're going to have health security. We're going to have retirement security. We're going to make sure that there's a, for anyone who gets up and punches that clock and works their behind off, there's going to be opportunity and there's going to be dignity and respect. But for too often, what we see is politics is about money. And standing up for low-wage workers and standing up for the 47%, if you will. Not high on the agenda. Because that doesn't bring in an awful lot of, doesn't bring in an awful lot of campaign contributions, does it? So as we watched this movie, We're Not Broke, and talked about, hey, we can invest. We have, there is money here. You got six people in Arkansas who have as much wealth as 100 million people, a third of the households in this country. A third of the households. And this weekend, this Saturday, 6 p.m. at the Cumberland County Democratic headquarters there in Carlisle, 46 Lowther Street, they're going to be showing the movie Heist, Who Stole the American Dream, looking at the economic crisis and say, you know, look back and say, how did this happen? How is it that the economy, the most powerful economy on earth, was almost brought to its knees? What were the forces behind it? What were the policies that brought it about? And what can we do differently? And then, you know, to have the conversation of, you know, look at the two candidates. Which direction do each one of them want to take us? And I would make the argument right now that, having seen the movie in the past, that all of the things that Romney's talking about are going to put us right back squarely before the grand heist and set up the next great bank robbery, the next great heist. And this is where I keep saying, you know, Democrats, push your party to make sure that workers have rights. Push your party to make sure that everyone has health care. Don't divide. Don't divide. But simply call for, you know what, in this community, the biggest, the strongest, the most powerful, they should be the ones doing the most work. They should be the ones carrying the most water. We should not be trying to bail out our economy. We should not be trying to dig out of debt off of the weakest among us. Yet that's exactly what's going on. The right in this country is saying, well, you know, austerity. You know, cut those social programs. Get those lazy people back to work. You mean the 47%, those folks who don't make enough money to pay federal income tax, those workers at those Walmart facilities there in Elwood, Illinois, and across the country who are making $8 an hour? You mean those people? And the answer is yes, because understand who the 47% are. They're the folks who, on Social Security, who don't make enough to pay federal income taxes. They pay all the other taxes, sales tax and property tax and all that stuff, but that doesn't count. And those low-wage workers, they don't make enough to pay federal taxes either. Let's take a quick break, back with the third hour. If you missed any portion of the first two, therickssmithshow.com. Get the podcast. We're right back after this with hour three. You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
I was sitting in the street,
in front of the semi. I was nervous. I was so nervous. And I stood in front of the truck, and he kept trying to go through us. But we weren't going down without a fight.
16-year-old Carrie Peniston, who was arrested Monday at the Sensata plant in Freeport, Illinois, trying to stop Mitt Romney's Bain Capital from shipping her mom's job to China. Sensata workers losing their jobs to China in November have set up a tent city called Bainport near the plant in Freeport, Illinois. They've repeatedly called on Mitt Romney to meet with them and help save their jobs. He has ignored them. Carrie, though, is determined to fight on and knows what she would tell Mitt Romney if she ever gets the chance.
I would look him straight in the eye. I'd be firm. I'd be assertive about it. I'm not going to give up. I think if I were to talk to him, I would want to convince him to save my mom's job and not take it to China.
National Nurses United says nurses at Veterans Administration medical centers across the country have overwhelmingly voted to ratify a national contract. The union says it's a master agreement unprecedented in its protections of patient care standards and for strengthening the voice of RNs in the care of America's veterans. RNs with National Nurses United have now gained their first national contract in the VA system. Staffing issues were front and center in the contract. National Nurses United says this first national contract in the VA system has many improvements for RNs and for patients. The union represents RNs at 22 VA facilities. Strike fever is spreading in South Africa. Jesse Russell explains why.
Government workers in South Africa could soon be on strike. Nearly 75,000 mine workers have been on strike in the African nation since August, and on Monday, a union representing government workers said that public sector workers could soon be walking off their jobs. Workers represented by the South African Municipal Workers Union would be demanding market-related salaries if they walk off the job this week. Currently, the strike is expected to be a one-day show of force, as well as solidarity with striking mine workers. But the union has said it could be extended depending on circumstances. Workers at platinum mines were the first to go on strike, followed weeks later by workers at gold and iron mines. Truck workers have also been striking for nearly 3 weeks, and that has led to fuel shortages in rural areas of the country. If the strike actions continue, it's likely rail and port workers will also be going out on strike October 15th.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union, and by the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Remembering that united again, divided we back. Rick Smith.
I gotta listen to man. Spinning on the palm of my hands. I'm almost missing you like a right there.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You know, the last couple of days, very interesting what's going on across the country, especially at the local Walmarts. For the second time in, 5 days now, we've seen workers walk off the job. And this morning, a bunch of workers walked off the job in places like Dallas, Texas, Seattle, Washington, Laurel, Maryland, Miami, Florida, and throughout California. And this is what I've been saying we need to be seeing. We need to see workers who have said, you know what? The minimum wage that I'm making, the just above minimum wage, ain't cutting it no more. We're making millions and billions of dollars for the handful. It's time that we're able to support our families. And I've got one of those workers from Dallas, Texas, Stacy Cotton Games, on the line. Stacy, thanks for taking time for me.
Hello.
Thanks for taking time for me. Tell me, what happened today?
Well, at 6:30 this morning, me and another associate just went and walked out. We walked out, and the organization, our Walmart, they all came up there and from different stores, and we did our protest, and we went in the store, and we actually were able to get two more associates to come out. And they actually, one was an overnight stalker. She walked out and walked out with us. And then another guy was in produce. And he was just starting his shift. And he went and clocked out. And then when we were done, he went and clocked back in.
So let me ask you, in doing this, what's the ask? What are you hoping to gain from this?
Better wages, respect.
What are the conditions like at the Walmart that you work at?
I work at the one in Ennis, and I work in the meat department, overnight stocker.
And what are you hoping to accomplish? I mean, what's, you know, at the end of this, you know, what are the conditions that you're working under? I mean, you know, do you think they're good conditions, bad conditions, where?
Well, we're understaffed, overtasked, and underpaid. And I'm hoping if enough people walk out, they'll finally get the hint, you know, hey, we need to staff this place, give these people more money, treat them better.
And stop harassing and retaliating against the workforce.
Yeah.
And spying on and the things that I've heard. Do those things happen at the Walmart that you work at? I mean, are you seeing your coworkers being harassed? Are you seeing your coworkers being retaliated against for
yeah.
speaking up?
Yeah. They've cut people's hours. They've treated them differently for speaking out. Mainly the cutting of the hours, you know, that affects people a lot when you cut their hours.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically cutting how much money they're putting in their paychecks and how the ability for them to support their families. I mean, we don't need, corporations don't need to shoot people anymore. They don't need to beat people up anymore. They just starve them.
Right. Yeah.
So as you're going through this day of action and you're organizing with other workers, where is this going to lead from here?
We're on our way right now to Bentonville, and we're going to the home office in the morning, and we're going to address these issues with Karen Casey, the head HR lady.
And have you done this? Has this happened in the past? I mean, I've read reports that, you know, that workers have met with their PR people, have met with their human relations folks, and it's a lot of lip service, but not much comes of it. I'm curious what your anticipation of this meeting is going to be.
Well, yeah, I mean, they went up there before and addressed issues with her, and I'm hoping we get through this time.
Yeah, I'm hoping for you as well, because if you win, then that means there's an opportunity for other workers across this country. I mean, you're really on the front lines in this. I mean, you're really, you know, one of the pioneers in this movement, and you should be given credit for that.
Right.
You know, so as, you know, our local Walmart employees listen, as the local people who work here and shop at Walmart, as they hear your story and they hear the conditions under which you work, you know, what do you want them to know?
That they're not alone, you know. There's people out there, you know, that stands with them, support them, and we all got to band together.
Solidarity, and, you know, things we've been talking about for the longest time. You need folks who are going to stand shoulder to shoulder. And are you seeing that in the place where you're working and there where you're heading to Bentonville?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, because I think about this, and I got to be honest. I read one of the press releases from the Walmart spokesperson who said, oh, well, you know, Walmart has some of the best jobs, the best, you know, the highest pay and the most affordable benefits and, you know, the best advancement. Do you see that being reality, that you have the highest pay, the best advancement, and the most affordable benefits?
No, because they're too busy trying to hold people back as far as advancing in their career at Walmart. I mean, people that apply for positions get looked over because of favoritism. As far as the pay goes, yeah, right. I mean, if you apply for a department manager position, you get 40 cents more to take on all kinds of extra responsibilities. And a lot of people say that's not worth it.
Yeah, you know, I think back to when, you know, my grandmother retired from a small department store in Cleveland, Ohio, back in 1985. And when she retired, she was making $8 an hour with full health care, full eye, full dental, 6 weeks paid vacation, sick days, you know, all of these things that, you know, the labor movement fought for over the years. And I look at the Walmart today, and I mean, we're talking, what, 27 years ago when she retired, and a defined benefit pension that she collects to this day, and the conditions in 27 years have actually gotten substantially worse.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because, you know, the way I look at it, I saw the, or was it, I think it's $8.90 an hour is the average that they pay at Walmart?
I don't know. It's less than that. It's, some people make like $7.95, $7.60. I mean, yeah.
Well, I wish you guys nothing but the best on your trip. I hope that it goes well, and we'd love to hear back as it goes on down the road. Stacy, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You know, I think about it quite often. You know, I go back and I remember those days. You know, my grandmother, you know, working in this department store, and it was called Uncle Bill's. It was a very small, very small department store. You know, kind of like the, in this area would have been the Clovers of the past. You know, would have been a smaller Kmart type thing where, you know, they were neighborhood stores. They provided decent paying, decent wage, decent benefit jobs for low wage workers. So you know what? Women could support their families. And most of the people who worked in those stores, the career folks, the people who were there for a long time, they were single parents. They were low wage workers. They were not the high skilled folks, but you know what? They were able to, through their labor, through their work, have dignity, have respect, be able to support their family, be able to take care of their children when they got sick. And you know what? Save for a little bit of retirement. I think about my grandmother who to this day is still able to collect that pension, is still able to make sure that she can put food on her own table to this day because of her labor. And that's what we need to go back to. We need to return to the days, and this isn't a radical idea. It's how we built a middle class in this country. It is how we built a prosperous middle class. Think about this. If you don't have health security throughout your life, you can't possibly be part of that. If you don't have retirement security, you can't be possibly anywhere near the middle class. And I think back to my grandmother who, you know, at the time, you know, wasn't a great job. But it paid fairly well. You were able to make ends meet. And you had a future. I look at what's going on in these retail jobs today. Because remember, this is the Reagan dream. A service-based economy. This is where we are. We are firmly in the service-based world. Where you scrub my floor and I'll wash your dog. Or you cut my grass and I'll wash your windows or whatever. That's the economy. We've seemed to have walked away from making things. We've allowed these big companies to go overseas, and we've paid them to go. We've allowed them to leave and then ship their things back here tariff-free and without any barrier, because that's what trade's all about. Buying stuff from another country that used to be made here, evidently. Maybe I'm missing something. But the service-based economy, this is where we're firmly implanted. These are the jobs of the 21st century. We're in huge trouble. If the Romney jobs of Staples and Domino's Pizza and Sports Authority that he claims he created, if that's the job of the 21st century, we're screwed. Literally. And I look at these, I'm looking at what these folks at Walmart are doing, and good on them. We need more of this. We need people across this area, across this country, taking to the streets and saying, enough's enough already. You got one family in this country who controls more wealth than 42% of the people. There's something seriously, seriously wrong with that. And good on them. I'm glad they're out in the streets, and I hope to hear more from Bentonville as they go and have their protests there in Arkansas. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Why we fight, why we violate. This is why we fight.
Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by Ask Me Council 13.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
It's out. This year's list of American success stories has just been published, and according to its compiler, it instills confidence that the American dream is still very much alive. Maybe you are one of these success stories. You might be a great public school teacher, for example, who motivated students to achieve new heights, or an inventor who came up with an energy-saving device and got it to market at a fair price, generating a profit for yourself, the environment, and society generally. No, not that kind of success. We're talking money, the flow of mammon beyond regular people's wildest dreams. That's how Forbes magazine measures not only success, but also a person's value. You are what's in your Swiss bank account. And just to rank last on this year's Forbes 400 listing of America's wealthiest people, you need more than $1 billion in financial wealth. The magazine gloated that these 400 swells jacked up their cumulative haul last year by $200 billion over the previous year, an average of $500 million each. Now that's success, baby, especially when the typical American family's income dropped by 4%. These ultra-wealthy, goes the Forbes narrative, are the deserving rich, for they are our economy's makers and producers, as opposed to being takers and moochers, like those commoners who get Social Security, Medicare, and other government help. Before swallowing that, however, note that roughly 40% of these achievers on the list achieved their wealth by being well-born. They inherited the money. And all of them have indeed been takers, not only enjoying government programs, but also subsidies and tax advantages available only to the rich. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Forbes list really says you got special treatment, not that you are special.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. So, you know, we've seen these letters in the past, and, you know, most of them are fakes. You know, the Snopes stuff, you look at, oh, well, you know, it's a hoax where the CEO sends the worker a letter saying, if you vote the wrong way, you're screwed. Well, it turns out David Siegel, guy who owns Westgate Resorts, one of those timeshare companies, one of those really big timeshare deals, evidently, he sent out a letter to his email to all of his employees that, you know, a lot of people thought was just a joke, was you know, like a hoax letter. He points out, he says, to all of my valued employees, as most of you know, our company, Westgate Resorts, has continued to succeed in spite of the very dismal economy. There's no reason that the economy has changed for all the worse, and we have not seen any improvement over the last 4 years. In spite of all the changes and challenges that we face, the good news is the economy doesn't currently pose a threat to your job. What does threaten your job, however, is another 4 years of the same presidential administration. And he rambles on, and he goes into this spiel, this screech about taxes, because if any new taxes are levied on me or my company, as our current president plans, I will have no choice but to reduce the size of this company. Rather than to grow this company, I'll be forced to cut back. This means fewer jobs, less benefits, and certainly less opportunity for everyone. And he goes on, and it's a long, rambling letter talking about taxes and talking about why, you know, he's so important and why he's the job creator and all of this stuff. And he finishes it off with kind of the punchline. If that happens, you can find me in the Caribbean sitting on a beach under a palm tree, retired with no employees to worry about. And I go, you know, really? Did the guy just write that? That if you vote for Obama, he's going to close the doors, he's going to leave the country, and he's going to dump everything he's worked for? Really? Does anyone believe that? And the answer is no. But they threaten. And this is how much power we have given this 1%. This is how much power we have given the few. Which is why I truly believe we need to be breaking up these huge monopolies. We need to be reining in the power of the wealth class to do harm to this economy. Now understand, this guy, this David Siegel, the timeshare king, if you will, earlier in the year, he caught some attention because he evidently building the biggest house in the country, 90,000 square feet, a 90,000 square foot mansion inspired by Versailles. And, you know, you look at this and you go, do we need this guy? I mean, as a society, really? Do we need them to have this kind of power? And should they be allowed to have this kind of power? Understand, power corrupts, absolutely. Absolute power like this guy has over his employees, or he thinks he has. I'm going to take my toys and I'm going to go. I mean, it's just, wow. And I guess it's a testament of how much they've been given. It's a testament to how much they control, how much power they've accumulated, the political system that they own. I guess that's it, that they see their workers, that they see people at the bottom as just, well, pawns, puppets to be manipulated. That an email, to me, you just sent me that email. Now I know how I'd vote, however you wanted me to vote. Now, could that be considered voter intimidation? Even though he said, well, I'm not trying to tell you how to vote. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to tell you I want your wallet, but I have a gun. I mean, is that armed robbery? Sounds like it to me. It just blows the mind how much power we've given them and ceded it without really much of, because we believe this nonsense that somehow they're the job creators. Somehow they're the ones who are going to give us jobs. I just keep shaking my head. And I look at all of the money that we just hand out to the wealth class. And I saw this story. How many Yuengling beer drinker fans are there? I've never had it, so I don't know anything. I don't know if it's any good or not. I know some people like it. You know, some people swear by it. I think most people like me never heard of it. I think I always, you know, when someone brought it up, I thought it was a Pittsburgh thing, to be honest with you. But evidently it's made in Pottsville. And it's the oldest brewery in the country. Now the largest American-owned brewery in the country, as, you know, the other one, Anheuser-Busch, was sold off. They're expanding. Evidently, they're getting bigger. And, you know, I was reading this article that's basically saying, well, you know, hey, we're going to look around. You know, we're going to, you know, if people are going to give us money, we're going to take it. And the guy who's the head, this Dick Yingling Jr., says, you know, some states are very ugly, which, you know, means beggar thy neighbor, which means how much are you going to be able to shake them down for? And understand the states he's going to shake down. It's going to be Ohio. It's going to be West Virginia, maybe Kentucky, Tennessee, somewhere in those areas. We're going to shake them down. He says, you know, we don't necessarily base business decisions on incentives like that, but if they're going to give them to somebody, we would stand there and take them from them. He says that Pennsylvania is a great location, but it's not business friendly. And, you know, I stop and I think about this often because, you know, we've got a governor who keeps saying, you know, well, we're going to make Pennsylvania this tax paradise. And I keep asking the question, if we keep giving these companies money, if we keep giving more and more to them, and we keep gutting education, what kind of a workforce are they going to have? Because the guy says, look, you know, we want to make sure that we have workers who can do the job. At some point, if we give so much away that we have no money to have infrastructure or education, what's it going to leave? Other than a state that's willing to hand out money hand over fist. Which is what this is going to turn into. And we already know how this movie plays out. This is a shakedown. And it's a way for politicians to say, hey, wow, we created more jobs. And it's a way for companies to pat themselves on the back and say, hey, look at us. All the while, you and I are paying for it. I'm a believer in, you know what? No government money, no tax dollars should be going to any of these companies. If the right wants free markets, it should be free from government money, free from taxpayer dollars. I got to be honest, I don't know that beer is a national imperative. I would rather see any money that we're going to hand out to them go towards energy, go towards education, go towards health care. But I guess you don't hold many ribbon-cutting ceremonies and build many breweries or build many buildings like that. And I just, you know, I look at this and I go, you know, I think our priorities are screwed up. And you look at the story that, you know, we've got this congressman, Steve Pierce, Republican from New Mexico, who, you know, you just kind of shake your head and you think about Teddy Roosevelt for a second, because he invokes the name of Teddy Roosevelt, because he was speaking at this Representative Pierce was speaking at the Colorado Conservative Political Action Conference. And he was saying, look, you know, the federal government gave all this land back to the states, but, you know, the West didn't get their land, and it was Teddy Roosevelt who wanted big forests and big national parks. And he says, you know, it's killing our education. Basically saying we should be able to drill those lands and lease them out. You know, right in the middle of the Grand Canyon, have an oil derrick. Nothing wrong with that. Right there at Mount Rushmore, put a needle in his eye. And he goes into saying something I thought was kind of interesting. He's talking about Mitt Romney, who he seems to believe will hock off all of the state forests and hock off all of the state lands in the West. Because he said, you know, Romney knows that if we want to reverse the trend, we'll reverse this trend of public ownership of lands, starving education. Now, Romney, his people have said, you know, they're not targeting national parks for drilling. But Pierce is saying, well, you know what? We should be drilling there. Because evidently, there's 700 million acres of public land that if we follow this view of drill, baby, drill on all of our public lands, that's supposed to be, and understand, Roosevelt was a decent Republican. You've now got a Republican Party that has walked so far away from the principles of a decent Republican. They're so far to the extreme that they're even going against their own guys. This guy, he was a conservationist. He was a true conservative. Conserve some of your lands. Conserve your institution. Conserve what's making you great. They want to hock it off to the highest bidder. And I look at this, and it's just more of the privatization, more of nothing, Nothing is in the hands of we the people. Nothing is in our hands. It's all got to be for a profit, for a price. And the consequences be damned. I think it's wrongheaded. I think it's ignorant. I think it's stupid. But it is the course that we're taking. And that's why I think this election is very clear. The decision is very clear. And for all of my concerns about Obama and all of the things I complain about, nobody in my mind is going to be perfect for that office. Nobody. And I'm going to push to hold him accountable. I'm going to push him in the right direction. But at the end of the day, in this horse race between the two of them, to me, there's no competition. Romney takes us back to the days of Heist. Takes us back to the days before the grand bank robbery. And on Saturday at 6 p.m. at the Democratic Party headquarters there in Cumberland County, 46 Lowther Street, they're going to be showing the movie Heist. You know, who stole the American dream? Going to look back at how did it all happen? How did they almost bring the most powerful economy in the history of civilization to its knees? What policies, what ideas, what happened? Who did it? Why it happened? And how we make sure it never, ever happens again. And I tell you, how we stop it from never happening again is we don't allow the people who advocate for more tax cuts for the very wealthy and gutting education and deregulation and all of the things that got us into the mess that we were in thanks to the Bush years. Don't let them anywhere near policymaking. Let's take a quick break. Right back with Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Earth, sky. In August 2012, NASA launched a mission aimed at understanding the dynamic and erratic Van Allen belts surrounding our planet Earth.
The Van Allen belts are a torus, or ring, around Earth. Two donut-shaped regions full of high-energy particles held in place by Earth's magnetic field. They're home to killer electrons, plasma waves, and intense electrical currents that can disrupt the electronics on satellites.
This mission, called the Radiation Belt Storm Probes, has launched near the height of the Sun's 11-year cycle of activity. Sometimes a solar storm can swell the Van Allen belts with high-energy particles and energy. This creates havoc for Earth-orbiting satellites by accelerating electrons, what scientists call killer electrons, and creating electrical currents. Other times, the radiation belts grow very calm and depleted during sunstorms. Occasionally during a solar storm, scientists can't detect any change in the Van Allen belts.
Twin spacecraft will fly in separate orbits across the inner and outer Van Allen belts. They'll observe how and when killer electrons are energized, sample the electrical and magnetic fields that are present, count particles, and detect plasma waves of different frequencies.
The ultimate goal is to improve space weather forecasting. That is, how storms on the sun can cause geomagnetic storms that upset earthly telecommunications and electronics. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. So, big news from South Florida. A man died Friday, shortly after being crowned the proud champion, the proud winner of a beautiful python. It seems they were at Ben Siegel's reptile store in Deerfield Beach. And our champion, well, he ate too many cockroaches during the roach eating contest. Now, experts claim the bug shouldn't have killed him. Tests are underway to determine the cause. And I'm always of the mindset when stupid people do stupid things, this is how we thin the herd. What are you doing eating? I don't know. It just is what it is. Let's talk to our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, to find out what's going on around the world. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, thank you. I want to know, were the bugs dead when he ate them?
No. They're right there crawling around.
Crunch. I can't even deal with it.
Hungry? I remember when I was in college, I had a biology professor who would not allow you to pass the class without eating the chocolate-covered ants. That was a long fight on my part, because I don't eat anything I don't recognize immediately. And even then, that's a tough sell.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't deal with it.
I knew that would start our segment off just right. And it would churn your stomach, like most things that my friends on the radical right do, churns my stomach. I look at the state of voting here in the country, and I see the Secretary of State in Ohio. He hasn't let me down.
No, he hasn't. They have absentee voting until the day that you can actually vote, which is a 4 weeks from today. And they passed a state law saying that you cannot have absentee ballots with voting within 3 days of the election. So the Democrats in Ohio went to federal court, and federal court says that was a violation. The law was unconstitutional. Then they went to the appellate court in the district. The appellate court said it was unconstitutional. So today, where'd they go? The Supreme Court. No word yet from them.
I'm sure. It's all about, pushing it down to the wire and then distraction. I mean, you look what happened here in Pennsylvania. The courts struck it down for this election, said, your whole voter ID scheme, not this election. It's a fight for next year, but not for this election. So what does the King Kook do here in Pennsylvania, Darrell Metcalf? He goes and really stages a diversion and has one of the state reps who everyone knows does not say the Pledge of Allegiance, has her videotaped saying that she's not going to do it, because during a committee he says, well, Babette, will you lead us in the pledge? And he knows she doesn't do it, and it's just, again, a diversion. So that's been the conversation with a lot of my right-wing kook friends. You believe she doesn't say the pledge? Well, she hasn't for years. Since 1954 she hasn't said it.
Oh my gosh!
Well, since they changed it to her, she believes it's a prayer, and I don't disagree with her. I mean, when it was a pledge to the flag, and the whole thing of false icons and false gods and pledging allegiance to the flag under God's name. Never mind. I mean, that's a whole discussion.
Well, something really interesting. When I was in elementary school many times ago, they said you could not pray in school, and so they changed the Christmas carol and the Christmas program from saying, instead of when Jesus Christ was born, to when Blessed Babe was born.
Yeah, well, I just think a lot of things have gotten crazy. But look, if you don't believe what I believe, I'm of the mindset that, I should be free of religion if I choose to be, and I shouldn't have it rammed down my throat. If I choose to engage in my personal life, and I want to go to church, and I want to go to I want to be a Pastafarian, I should be allowed to do that, but I shouldn't have it rammed down my throat.
But you and I do agree on that one.
Just my thought. Romney talking about the big vice presidential debate.
Well, yes, basically he's trying to diminish expectations for Paul Ryan by saying, well, you know, the vice president has had in the Senate, if Senator Biden has had a lot of debate experience. He had debate experiences, of course, the vice presidential nominee last time around, et cetera. So he is trying to diminish expectations.
So you're not going to see anybody like Chris Christie coming out and saying this is going to redefine the election or anything like that. They're really lowering the bar even as far as they can.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, is it any different than every other? And then the other messaging, well, this is just the vice president. This is just number two. It's not a big thing. It's nothing.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that this is just a pregame speculation, so to speak.
Yeah. What do you think is going to happen on Thursday?
I actually think the vice president is going to clean Mr. Ryan's clock. I really do.
Do you think Ryan will come out? Because there's part of me I have two thoughts. Ryan's going to come out and be fairly meek and timid and not try and blow Romney's lead, or he's going to come out like Romney did, super aggressive, over aggressive.
I think he's going to try and come off as likable and smart. The smart thing, I don't think he's going to have trouble with. The likable, he might.
Yeah. And I saw something that said that there's between Romney and Ryan, there's the biggest age gap between?
Biden. Ryan and Biden, right. Yes, and the vice president. The vice president is 69. I believe he's 69. And Ryan is 42 years old, 28-year age gap almost between the two.
What was the difference between Benson and Quayle?
Largest in the history of vice presidential debates.
So do you think there'll be another one of those sunny boy moments?
Hello?
Do you think there'll be one of those sunny boy moments like Benson? You're no Jack Kennedy.
Well, I don't know, but you know, because of the age gap, a lot of people are expecting that there is going to be the issue of Medicare that's going to come up and the generational difference, that Ryan, you know, keeps on saying, is it moral, the way that we're sort of running all this Medicare stuff for older people. It's going to be interesting because of the age gap, I think.
Is it moral? I mean, the folks who are getting Medicare or who are close to Medicare, these are people who worked their entire lives knowing that at the end of the road they were going to have some retirement security. And, you know, what always infuriates me is I've got friends who are like, well, you know, why should they get it and we don't? I'm going, exactly, why don't you get it? Why is it that you want to take it from my grandmother? Why is it you want to take it from people who are going to be just getting there? Instead of saying, why don't we all have retirement security? And why don't we all have health security?
Well, we certainly could figure out a way to do that financially. And actually, one of the interesting things is Chuck Schumer today spoke at the press club, and he talked about the need to raise taxes. And particularly on the very wealthy, that if you really want to save the middle class, Mr. Romney is going about doing it in exactly the wrong way.
Well, I mean, it's about time some politician says what I've been saying for almost 2 years now, which is the tax reform idea of 86 is a bad idea. It failed working people, and it created a massive, massive wealth class in this country. You know, you can make the argument, well, it brought in receipts for a short period of time. Yeah, and they used all that money that we gave them to go and lobby from the same tax breaks and even bigger and better ones that created a bigger and better billionaire class. And what happened? I'm still paying tax on my unemployment.
Yes, and that's the problem, that they're the wrong people here.
And, you know, I've been saying this for, you know, every speech I give, every time I go to a different labor group, I understand the tax reform bill of 2013 is coming. And it means that they're going to raise, just like they did in 86, they're going to raise taxes on the poor people, lower taxes on the rich people, temporarily cut loopholes because, you know, hey, politicians need campaign money. And we're going to see this whole vicious cycle over again. I've seen the movie. I don't want to see the rerun.
Yeah, well, and I'm afraid if Mr. Romney gets in, you are. Fortunately, I don't think he's going to get in. The people better get out that vote.
But another, I mean, Schumer brought up a good point on this, though. It's conventional wisdom. It's Democrats, it's Republicans, it's everybody across the political spectrum who's buying into this. Oh, we just need to lower rates because they've all bought this Reagan mythology that, oh, well, he brought in more money. Yeah, for a very short time until they went and they gave all those loopholes again away. And then what happened? Well, you had lower rates and the same damn loopholes. We end up losing again. And what happens? No investment in infrastructure, no investment in education, and we're the Flintstones when we should be the Jetsons.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, that really is the major problem that we're going to see. And the problem is I don't know that we're going to get this kind of confrontation at any of the presidential debates. It's too bad because I think the president would really shine on that.
Yeah, well, I hope so. I mean, at this point, I saw the national poll out today shows Romney up. I know that's the horse race.
Unfortunately, the national poll is not the state-by-state poll.
Right. And, you know, I told someone today, don't be surprised if you see a situation where Obama wins the Electoral College and loses the national vote.
Well, we've seen that before.
Yeah. It is what it is. And I saw the new Obama ad on Big Bird. We played it a little bit earlier. Thoughts? Good? Bad?
Well, I thought, when I saw the script and the description of it that the Democrats sent out, I was pretty horrified. And then I actually saw the ad and it made me laugh. And I thought, well, they're obviously trying to get people to have a little bit of levity and laughter about this. I didn't think that was so bad.
No. Well, here's the ad. I mean, I kind of liked it. You know, whenever you can, you know, type Big Bird and Dennis Kozlowski, why not?
Bernie Madoff, Ken Lay, Dennis Kozlowski, criminals, gluttons of greed, and the evil genius who towered over them? One man has the guts to speak his name.
Big Bird, Big Bird, Big Bird.
It's me, Big Bird.
Big, yellow, a menace to our economy. Mitt Romney knows it's not Wall Street you have to worry about. It's Sesame Street.
I'm going to stop the subsidy to PBS.
Mitt Romney, taking on our enemies no matter where they nest.
I like that, no matter where they nest. And I like the Rick Santorum, what he said the other day.
Well, as a matter of fact, I've voted to kill Big Bird in the past. So I have a record there that I have to disclose. That doesn't mean I don't like Big Bird. I mean, you know, you can kill things and still like them.
You can kill things and still like them, Ellen.
Oh, my gosh.
I miss him. I do. I miss the Republican field. I miss the primary field. That was just pure gold right there.
It's just staggering.
So the TV, the Children's Television Network folks, not happy about the ad?
No. They feel that Big Bird should not be politicized and that they have never endorsed any political candidate. Okay, but you know what? You're on the airwaves. It's fair game.
Well, I mean, if I remember right, haven't they delved into some fairly political things? I mean, isn't there a Gay Muppet? I mean, isn't on Sesame Street? Isn't there?
I don't know that there is. I do know that there was this.
Or is that the Muppets?
The right wing complained about Teletubbies.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's what it was.
Okay.
They thought that the Teletubbies was becoming gay for some reason because I guess one of them was purple. I don't know.
Everything purple. Everything purple.
To worry about.
And everything purple must be gay, I guess, right?
Don't ever wear purple, right?
And finally, the Obama campaign is saying that they've got Ohio?
Well, they basically said, yes, that Ohio is Obama country. And the reason they're saying that is because, actually, a friend of mine used to be chairman of the Democratic Party in Ohio, and although they lost the 2010 election big time in Ohio, as you well know, they were able to put in the infrastructure in terms of get out the vote and on the ground.
Yeah.
And they've been able to use that in terms of this. And that's why I think the Obama people confidently, hopefully, are saying that Ohio is Obama country.
Well, I mean, you think about all the resources that went in there in the SB 5 fight. And I'm hoping that they maintain that because that was an amazing campaign.
It certainly was.
And I saw a poll, I'm not sure where it was, that cousin Josh is kind of neck and neck with Sherrod Brown. Is that true?
Well, just putting that out, I don't think that's what the internals are saying from Sherrod Brown, but if anybody has any money to send Senator Brown, please do.
Yeah, well, that's another seat we need. Ellen, I appreciate the time. It is always great talking with you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
I got a picture in my pocket of a lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm on till 1 a.m. I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
AFSCME, Council 13 members. Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record keeping and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller CPA and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check him out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com, and take the worry out of tax time.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Yeah, you're looking for experience. You're looking for someone with a proven track record. When the climate changed about man-made global warming in this country, and everybody rushed to say, oh, we need to do something now about this huge problem. I didn't change. I stood tall and said,
this is the end.
This climate science of man-made global warming was not climate science, it was political science.
Yeah. Sure told them, huh? Political science, not climate science. I still love the eating Big Bird, though.
Well, as a matter of fact, I've voted to kill Big Bird in the past, so I have a record there that I have to disclose. That doesn't mean I don't like Big Bird. I mean, you know, you can kill things and still like them. I mean, maybe to eat them, I don't know, but that's probably that. Can we go back on that beautifully, badly phrased.
I think we should end on that note, just to let you feel really uncomfortable.
That's
you can
a bad
kill
YouTube
things
moment,
but still
right
like
there,
them. Rick Santorum. What a perfect way to end the interview.
Yeah, what a perfect way. And a perfect way to end a career. Oh, man, I'll tell you. And I look at this whole thing with Big Bird, and while I think it is silly on a certain level, I like it. I like the fact it adds a little levity to the campaign. I guess you can poke fun, although the Sesame people not very happy. Anyway, welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app. Take the program on the go. Today, you had Romney running around blaming Obama for Congress failing to pass a farm bill. And, you know, look, the Democratic Senate, they passed their version of the farm bill back in June. A five-year bill. The House Agricultural Committee, they passed theirs as well. But what you've got is you've got Eric Cantor, the majority leader, saying, well, we're not going to bring it for a vote. So I'm kind of curious how it is that, well, it's Obama's fault. And Romney released his agricultural policy paper today, and oddly enough titled, It's Obama's Fault, as is everything else, for the inaction on the farm bill. He said, this legislation provides important peace of mind for farmers and ranchers through programs that help manage market volatility and respond to natural disasters. Hold on. Stop the presses. Manage market volatility. What happened to the free market? What happened to getting government out of our lives? What happened to letting our businesses be business and stopping the government picking winners and losers? What happened to that? Oh, when it better, never mind. Don't even, it's going to hurt if you think about it. Just stop. It's so much easier to believe that Republicans are the free market people and that those other people, they're the socialists. They're the ones who pick the winners and losers. Keep that frame. I don't want anyone to get hurt listening to the program. I don't want anyone to feel bad that they're wrong. Just, you know. But he points out, unfortunately, that peace of mind, you know, managing the economy, that peace of mind has been wiped away by a Congress struck by gridlock and a president unwilling to show leadership. Aside from the president going with a switch and whipping Eric Cantor and Paul Ryan, what more would he have done? It goes on, his paper goes on, Mitt Romney understands that leadership is not an option for a president. The job demands it. The American people deserve it. Explain to me what he's going to do differently. Am I missing something? Tell me what a strong farm bill is. Because he goes on to say, you know, with Romney as president, you're going to see a strong farm bill is passed in a timely manner to give farmers and ranchers the certainty. Understand, free market, risk, reward. He wants certainty. But, you know, never mind. Don't want you to hurt yourself. The certainty that they need for their operations and their livelihoods. Again, as most things with Romney, the devil is in the details. What does a strong farm bill look like? Does it mean more handouts for the big agribusiness and slashing and burning the SNAP program, ending nutrition programs for schools? Doesn't say. Again, like most things he does, doesn't say. He goes on to say that what Romney believes is in an appropriate level of government support for farmers. Again, I don't know what that means. I don't know what appropriate means. But I do know what his plan goes on to say. More tax handouts. Doing away with the estate tax. Expanding trade. Oh, we need to expand trade. And, of course, for Wall Street as well. Cut those regulations. And create Reagan economic zones. Reagan economic zones. I don't even know what the hell that means. But I know it's whatever they attach Ronald Reagan to. It's like the old... Well, we're going to have to pick this up again tomorrow. If you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. We're going to pick up with the Reagan economic zones.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the Buddha's sway. Imperial, mysterious.